This is Hacker Public Radio episode 3346 for Monday, the 31st of May 2021. Today's show is entitled HPR 2020, 2021 New Year's Eve, Show Episode 3. It is hosted by Hunky Magoo and is about 175 minutes long and carries an explicit flag. The summary is, the HPR community stops by for a chat.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
FFmpeg makes it quite easy to record a stream, actually. FFmpeg /i, hacker.publicradio.org/live/c, copy, and then the file name. That's it, you're done. So, do I open a bug for Nextcloud that I can't set the time and date? Comments, please. So, Nextcloud has a calendar application, and if you set If you want to schedule a date and a time and date, it gives you 1 to 12 as the options for hours and AM and PM. But that just is a format that is not used here in the Netherlands. We use military time for selecting calendar dates. So do I open a bug on that and or not? That is the question.
Is this a preview of the show you're going to make, how to bypass the locale?
I'm not going to make that show.
I see.
I have been using Danish English for a while on the locales, and then everything comes out correctly. But I don't know if that's going to work. It doesn't work when your operating system updates the locales and then it blasts that out of the way. So if all the applications on Linux have decided that the only way is to use the only way to do preferences is to use locales, and that there are only 100 different variants on what you're allowed to do. If that's what they're saying, then we should be allowed to modify custom locales without them being blown away. And they should be respected by the applications as well.
I seem to be using the English US.utf-8.
But aren't your dates messed up? Say you want to have the dates as 2020-month-day.
I think the problem is I don't know the date on what.
You have that set as your default locale. That's fine.
Yeah, so I basically try to use everything as much in the terminal as possible. So if you go into the terminal and type date now. Oh, yeah, I get Thursday, December 31st, which makes no sense. You're right.
Yeah. And what I want to get is 2020-12-31T15:13:21. So I personally want ISO 8601 because it's the only sane date format, human readable date format. But it affects other things, like, for example, if you pick that locale, now your currency symbol is defined as a dollar and not the, I don't know where you're, krona or euro.
Yeah, it's krona.
Yep.
Which is fine because it's not a symbol in itself. It's SEK.
Yeah, in my case, it would be the euro symbol. So, but that
can always use EUR.
No, because it's automatically populated by certain applications.
Ah, alas.
Pentacas. And I would just like to wish the person who received my PinePhone somewhere in the UK, Birmingham, all the best for the new year. Thanks. Hope you're enjoying it. I'm not having too much luck with buying stuff from Pine 64.
Why? Oh, did it go to the wrong address?
Yep. It ended up in the UK. don't know why. And the sales, I opened a ticket and they said, yeah, but it's been delivered. I said, yeah, but it's been delivered to the wrong country, wrong address. Okay, then contact some other people, you know, the sales team. And I contacted them and nobody ever got back to me. So there's that.
Does that mean that someone actually picked it up?
Oh, presumably somebody has it, because I don't.
That is hilarious.
Yeah. Google Drive have updated their security effective June 2021. If you're inactive for 2 years, that's 24 months, in Gmail, Drive, or Photos, we may delete your contents in which you're inactive. If you exceed your storage limit for 2 years, we may delete the contents across Gmail, Drive, and Photos. That's reassuring. I seem to remember there was unlimited forever promises made there, or maybe I mistook that.
Well, initially it seemed like it was going to be that way with email ever expanding, but turns out that when it comes to photos, people can take as many as they want, or actually as many as they can.
That's a fine looking breakfast, Claudia. Is he left-handed or is the camera switched? The fork is on the right-hand side and the knife is on the left-hand side.
Also pointing to the left-hand side, which is weird.
No, it's not flipped. Otherwise, the text on the, what is that, butter would be flipped. Why do you eat that way, Claudia? Why?
I guess he's too busy chewing his breakfast.
So, let's see what the text says. Okay, the kitchen table with a tub of butter spread at the top left, a butter knife below it, an octagonal plate of scrambled eggs with spinach, and two whole wheat toast slices, a fork to the right of the plate, and my black mug of coffee with milk and honey at the top right with a spoon submerged. That is some accessibility marking there. I have to give it to Claudia. Well done. And it's a butter knife. We're just uncivilized people that don't recognize a butter knife. This is from Claudio's two-way streams here on Mastodon. Mastodon.
Is it a butter knife?
Well, he says it in the text.
Looks too big to be a butter knife. I mean, it might be the knife he uses for butter, but it's... Here, butter knives are made of wood.
That's true, yes.
Hello?
What website are you referring to, Claudio?
Claudio's Mastodon feed. You're coming in pretty low, K-Wisher.
How's that? How's that?
Much better.
That's much better.
So, Ken Fallon, I have a few questions for you.
All right. Bye.
Do you have... Right. You are the admin for this Mumble server, is that correct?
That is correct, yes. Well, I'm paying for it, yes.
So why is it still running Ubuntu 16.04?
Because it's from a service called, let me check, Voice Commander Center. And I've opened them a ticket and they said they'll look into it. But 16.04 is a supported operating system. So there you go.
Right, I understand that. But it's causing some minor issues for people connecting to the older server with newer Mumble clients.
Yep. And as this is a hosted service, there's zero I can do about it other than open a ticket.
So you can't do a OS upgrade?
No, it's a hosted service. They run, so go to voicecommandcenter.com. Hold on, I'll paste it into the Etherpad.
I was just curious as why it was still on 16.04 and an older Mumble server.
Because they're on, that's what they put on that service. It's a hosted service by them. And that's it. That's the version they're running.
So Happy New Year's Eve, Hacker Public Radio.
Happy New Year's Eve, Nightwise.
Hey, guys.
Hi, Nightwise.
Hey, Ken.
Hello, Nightwise.
Hi, guys.
Turn on push to talk, please.
Yes.
So I have a technical support instant number 22762 blah. We're seeing errors on some Mumble clients running under Ubuntu 20.04 versions have connection errors. It's possible that you can upgrade to a newer server version. They replied saying, we are researching this request, provided we don't have any issues, we should be able to upgrade the Mumble server soon.
So who's paying for this hosted service?
I am. I wasn't all the time, but who used to pay for it? Name escapes me. Asked if anybody was still using it. Hacker Public Radio were, and I then took it over.
So does HPR have any options to add their own local server to host Mumble?
No, this is a hosting service. This is what they do. They have a web page in front of servers. You don't get any access to anything.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You can host your own Mumble server at home if you wanted to.
Yeah, I could do, yeah. But I don't want to because I'm already doing enough stuff. So what I wanted to do was pay for this service. I didn't mind paying for this because it was on for, this is a repeat of the another discussion we had earlier. So people who are already listening to this on the podcast can fast forward. But anyway, I went through and I do apologize for not being able to remember who it was that was paying for this for years and years and years. When they handed it over to me, there was a list of other podcasters using this. So, for example, the Boston Browns, I have no idea, Ledger, The Cass, Null Tech Show, Nullcraft, and Rev Unity and the Python Experiment. I Googled them, DuckDuckGo them, Internet Archive them, can't find any reference to them at all. Then the Techie Geek, Duke Maninoff, Geek with Guns, Linux Basics, Linuxburg, Open Source Musician, Pod Brewers, and Scannerdrome all appear to have pod-fitted. And the remaining shows that are active either using their own server or using this as a backup. So then I personally don't feel any obligation to continue paying this service to these people, Voice Commander, because we don't have access to the server, we don't have access to get it upgraded. I would much prefer to give that money as a donation to Delwyn or to somebody or to some open source project that Delwyn wishes me to give it to, than pay somebody else. And we move over to Delwyn server. Because I could run it here from home. I could put it on the Raspberry Pi, but then I'm administrating that and I have enough to be doing because just this last week we had a hard disk, a power outage here in the house, which fried one of my spinning hard disks and ended up losing some shows. Thankfully, we were able to get them back. But it just highlighted the fact that I don't want to be, I have enough to be doing. I don't need that on top of everything else, particularly when somebody else is kind enough to have a server to run this on. Make sense or not?
Yes and no. I would think you could send out a mass email to the list and ask for somebody to contribute to run this.
It's not about the money.
Well, I understand that. I mean, it's just the keeping it up to date and keeping things working.
Okay, the HPR server is on this Voice Commander service. Can you go to that page? Just click on that link and you'll see what I mean. It's a hosted service. It's like Gmail. It's like saying, Google, please update your IMAP server because it's out of date. There is no control. It's a hosted service. That's it. I don't have access to the server.
Where do you post the link?
Into the Etherpad, of course. I can send you privately the login information, no problem.
I don't need that. I'll look at that link. Just asking why you couldn't do your own updates and stuff.
Because I can't.
Yes, I understand why now, but I just wonder why.
Okay,
why you want to keep this service if you can't maintain it?
Because the reason for that was because there are so many people using the service, or so I thought. And only when this discussion came up on the mail list did I go through the list and check and see when how many are active. And there are still some active shows on there. And
well, then you just make your switch and tell them the new server.
Yeah, exactly. But we need to first of all, make sure nobody is actually using this because I took it over in good faith that I would pay for it if people in the community are using it. But it seems to be that people are either using their own servers or they're using Delwyn's because he seems happy enough with that. And he has a nice setup actually over there. The fact that you can go into the room and test your thing and everything, that's pretty cool.
Well, there's your other option.
Yeah. He's already set up a room, but for the New Year, he's already set up a room for Hacker Public Radio. But for the New Year show, I don't know. We might set up a mumble thing here locally. If he, it's a question I haven't asked him yet. Or can 200 people come and join your internet service is the thing. But for the community news and that sort of thing, what we use it for, his one would be more than sufficient.
So we're not started? We haven't started the New Year show yet? Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
This is just a topic of conversation. And everything
we're
here
is going to be open anyway. So, yeah.
Mega meta.
Hey, everyone. Can you hear me?
We can. Speak to us from beyond.
Hey, everyone. It's Claudio. How you doing? Happy New Year to all those in Australia.
Claudio!
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Still waiting for that time to roll around. But I'm going to be happy saying goodbye to 2020. I know it's been a crazy year, but I do have a lot of positive things to be thankful for this year. So, you know, I'm going to focus on that and not on the negative.
Excellent. List them off there. Number one. It's 2021.
All right, I'll be right back. Give me a second.
No worries.
When it comes down to being grateful, I call this year the year of the digital renaissance, the golden age.
No, it's not possible to run your business from home.
Oh, yes. Oh, God. I have been, it's been crazy. This is the first year that I have gathered 15 years of podcasting and live streaming skills and actually made a business out of it. It's crazy.
Yeah. Very good. Got my mother using WhatsApp videos, like video calling. She won't answer the phone now. She wants to see you. It's amazing. 87 or what age is she? 80 something?
Yeah, we had that with my wife's gran a couple of years ago. When she went to the retirement home, she was the first one that came in and asked, "What's the Wi-Fi password?" And the staff looked at her and they were like, "What?" And I'm an IT professional, and my sister-in-law works at an IT provider, and we actually sat the manager of the retirement home down in his office, and we said, "Okay, this is how we're going to do it. We are going to bring the 21st century to your retirement home." And yeah, it worked.
brilliant. No, it's actually quite good because although in order to contact her, I first need to ring her, then she needs to not pick it up, then she needs to ring me, then I need to pick it up, then I need to tell her which flu button to swipe up. So there's a whole 5-minute preamble thing that works, but still it is amazing.
I've made some iOS shortcuts for my niece and my in-laws, and this is they can FaceTime each other in just one button, bomb, directly. Apple shortcuts works great that way. Yeah, very convenient.
So yes, speaking of places, Mastodon. I'm also looking for a Mastodon service that would take, as a replacement for Twitter, that would take HPR. Again, too much to do, don't want to be maintaining something. Is there a Mastodon service out there that would be a good fit for Hacker Public Radio? And that means an automated bot that would post a small tweet or a toot every day during the week. Work weekday? Is that the word?
Workday?
Yeah, okay, that'll do. Workday, yes. Thoughts or ideas? You people listening along at home.
What's the issue with Mastodon now?
We don't have an account. I have an account on SDF that I use myself, and I want to be able to. We have a script that posts the RSS feed to Twitter every day. I've been doing that since like HPR started, more or less. And it seems that we should really be posting into the Fediverse as well, because hey, that's where our audience lives mostly. So rather than have to set up our own Fediverse server, Mastodon server, or whatever server, and become an expert at that. I just want to piggyback on somebody else's, you know, get an account on somebody else's service. But quite a lot of them don't allow automated bots to come in. They want community engagement and stuff like that. But in our case, it is very low amount of traffic, and it's mostly posts are mostly automated unless there's something like the HPR New Year show where I post. But I do monitor it, and if there is anybody who comments about HPR, I will reply directly as HPR. But yeah, basically, what is there a service out there that we can join?
Have you tried
without violating the terms?
Have you tried talking to one of the admins?
Yep. So there's this list called joinmastodon.org/communities.tech. I'll paste the link into the show notes. Etherpad, one second. Welcome, Northern Territories of Australia, Darwin, Alice Springs, and Uru. Just pasted in there, joinmastodon.org/communities/tech. Went through a few of them. And two of them that I've contacted would be normally happy with the sort of content, but they don't allow bots, so they don't want us to join. And then the remainder didn't get back to me.
Now, what if they just didn't know that it was a bot, and it could be just a regular person posting the shows on a daily basis?
That would reflect very badly on us, wouldn't it?
Fair enough.
No, I don't want to. Violate somebody's terms and conditions. I imagine, though, that if I was, there are people out there who have a no-bot policy but would be okay with that. But on the other hand, if they're okay with that, then somebody else's no-bot, somebody else would have a bot that they would think, yeah, but it's not, you let Hacker Public Radio, why don't you let us?
Have you tried talking to the, not the Tilda guys, the SDF guys? People?
That's an interesting one. On my account or on another account?
On another account, I would guess. Just asking them if it's okay to just have a bot running on their Mastodon thing. I think it would be okay. They're up for all kinds of experimentation, if I'm not mistaken.
Reading their terms of service? That would be fairly obvious if they... I've been looking for a service, and the service that would actually allow it is the service I'm actually using.
Yeah, I ended up just using Mastodon.social because I'm, you know, obvious like that.
Did someone say Mastodon?
Yes, they did. Did you miss the conversation?
No, I was listening in from my phone in the meantime.
Yeah, looking for a home for the HPR bot so that we can kind of tweet out. We have a Twitter feed that's been running for years, and yeah, it makes sense to me that should go to some Mastodon service somewhere, or the Fediverse at least.
Is it, you only have the Twitter one?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's an RSS feed. I can send anything everywhere, so that's not the issue.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
It's the I don't want to violate somebody's terms of service type thing. Archer72 says dev.2o bot wiki instructions to Mastodon bots. I will paste that into the show.
If I'm not mistaken, I think there's a bots.space instance, so maybe you can set something up there.
Oh yeah, that's there. Bots in .space.
Someone paste the link, please.
It's in the link that Archer72 sent.
Thank you. Adding it to the Etherpad. There follows Truncate Silence.
So just a little update. We've got 24 listeners on the audio stream server right now.
Very nice. Not bad for a Friday afternoon. What day is it? For a start, it's Thursday afternoon. Don't know why I think it's Friday the whole time.
I don't think I've ever seen 24 mass listeners on this stream since I've been doing it.
We've been behind cameras and underneath headphones for the better part of the year, so we're kind of used to it right now.
No, I'm talking about this show. In the years past, this is the only time I've run the audio stream, and this is the most listeners I've seen on 3 or 4 years of using it.
Excellent. Ah, okay, yeah. Delayed consumption of content.
What else would we be doing? Everyone else is in lockdown, so let's join HPR.
Well, maybe it's showing the connection issues, or it's just people.
Are people listening to the stream having connection issues?
No, I'm saying having mumble connection issues, so they're using the stream just to listen.
Yeah, and that's what I'm asking them. Are you having people listening to the stream? Are you listening to the stream because you're having mumble issues? You can reply by sending an email to admin@hackerpublicradio.org or by going to Mastodon. And how do you send a message to Mastodon?
At Ken Fallon.
Yes, at Ken_Fallon at mastodon.stf.org.
I do want to comment on that one. I want to pick in on a discussion that they had a couple of months ago on the Ubuntu UK podcast, where they were talking about the fact that, I think it was the EFF that was talking about it, that abhorred locked platforms, like, for example, Discord and stuff, as being non-free. Yet they did say that if they wanted to reach a larger base and larger public, and especially the next generation of developers, they needed to start using said platforms in order to reach their audience. And I would like to throw up the blasphemous question, why do we as an HPR community still stick to the mostly not free and open yet hugely niche platforms that we're using right now? Just a question.
Well, we've been posting to Twitter since before Twitter was known to be on the horizon. So there's nothing niche about that. What we're suggesting is that we're posting to Mastodon as well, where our community is.
Okay. What would we have as an audience, or what would our reach be if we were to do this on, let's say, something like a Discord server instead of IRC and Mumble?
Well, I would ask, would we not then use something like Jitsi Meet that will be open, audited, secure, commercial, supported?
And extremely niche.
It was ranked by the Consumenter Bond as the best video conferencing app. So it's not that niche. Everything is niche. Google was niche at one stage. I had a Google T-shirt. People asked me, "Hey, who? What's that?" Yeah. So.
Yeah.
So in your opinion,
go ahead.
In your opinion, we would reach a wider audience if we spread out to something like Discord as opposed to using Mumble.
From a marketing, I'm talking marketing-wise, not developer-wise. From a marketing point, it's not about what you as an entrepreneur want. It's actually what your client wants. And it's all about being where your client is. You can have your client come to you, but it will take a lot more effort for the client to do so, and your reach will be smaller. It takes less energy to go to your client where the clients are.
Agreed. Clients, but who's our client in this exercise? Who's the client?
Our client would be potential listeners who we can inspire with our content.
Okay.
Right, let me summarize. Because we...
Well, for a start, I'm on the record as disagreeing with that, in a way.
Totally, okay,
The approach to me is that our target audience is to get hosts in, not listeners. However, there is an argument that you need the listeners in order to get the hosts. Not 100% sure about that. However, HPR, this New Year's show, is something different. It's a meeting of hackers. So the technology that was available when this started was Mumble. These other technologies that you talk about didn't exist. So.
Okay, so do we keep using these technologies because they were there when we started? Because we know them, or because they are the best platforms to do so? Because if the goal of the organization is to get new hosts, and through getting new hosts, we do need more listeners, because you become a listener first and then a host. So we continually need to find new listeners. It's our sales funnel, as it was. So, but now by focusing on just getting hosts, we end up talking to each other in ever smaller circles, where we need to burn much more energy to find new hosts, because we're using niche channels, than opposed to go sit in the digital high street using a non-free application, but reaching a much larger audience and more potential hosts.
Yeah, but the opposite side of that is when everybody else runs, you walk. I fundamentally disagree with what you're saying, because then your signal gets lost in the crowd, and then you're chasing the algorithm. You see it on YouTube, people who are monetizing. YouTube changes their policy. Now we need long form videos. We need short form videos. We're changing this. You can't say that. Restrictions come in.
Absolutely. I completely agree.
Proprietary software is required. And the target audience here are not people who consume, they're people who create. Where are those people likely to be? They're likely to be on the edge, on the fringe. We make a community for those people and we bring them in. But HPR has always had a policy where we will use, while the majority of people are strongly biased to free open source tools, we are not. That is not what the network is about, and we will use other services if they're deemed to be appropriate. However, the operating systems that a lot of our community use don't support these proprietary platforms because they haven't released the code on those proprietary platforms. Take, for example, the Raspberry Pi. I can't watch the national broadcaster despite paying taxes for the service because I've got an ARM processor and not an Intel processor, so the DRM won't work in that. So these are the issues that you're facing with. In theory, what you're saying is correct. Not 100% sure it applies to HPR, though.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I love the fact that HPR is still on IRC and that we are finding out ways to do stuff with open source. But the thing that we do need to think about, perhaps, I'm just throwing it out there.
We're also on Mastodon, we're also on Discourse, we're also on Telegram, we're also on Twitter, we're also on Facebook, we're also on Google Play, and we're on 101 other services that have been disregarded. So what you're saying doesn't make sense because we are on these services. But where we pull people in from are from the fringe services. So what I'm saying here, this discussion is about, we're posting to Twitter. We don't get any feedback from Twitter. We don't get any comments back in. We don't get any feedback on the shows from Twitter. We don't get any new hosts from Twitter. But
okay,
there's a vast majority of people out there on Mastodon, listening to Mastodon and the Fediverse. Those people, when I post about a HPR show, it gets boosted, it gets promoted, it gets shared. Like last week when we were on Hacker News, we got new people in who had never heard about us. And they never heard about us because we weren't on the other services, the niche services.
Yeah, it's just a thought experiment that I would like to just throw out there, because for the last couple of years with my own company, I've helped a lot of smaller companies do digital communications, bringing their brand and bringing their business out there. And it's always been about, what do you want to do? Where's your client? How do you reach them? Well, where's your audience, your potential audience? And it was just a thought experiment that I would like to throw up there, to throw out there and think about, what do we actually want? I know that HPR is not about thousands of listeners, yet we do need an audience to generate more hosts. And then the question is, if we find hosts through the niche platforms, by all means, we should continue to put it out there on the niche platforms. It was just a little bit of a thought exercise that I would like to do. Are we on the right channels? Are we using the right media to get new content and new hosts?
You know, I wonder if maybe, I know a lot of people, what they do, if they have an account on Twitter and they have an account on the Fediverse, what they'll usually do is that they'll use their Twitter as their main, and then they'll send over to, they'll kind of, I guess they use a reblogging service or reposting service where it posts to various social media. And then they kind of, as a secondary, they send it over to the Fediverse, the same post that's on Twitter, which kind of tends to not work well. And people on the Fediverse kind of, they don't look kindly to that because they're looking at it kind of like a second class citizen. But maybe what Hacker Public Radio could do is the opposite, is do the reverse, use the Fediverse as the primary method for sharing about episodes or about recording or about Hacker Public Radio in general, and then kind of reblogging that over to Twitter. And if there's anybody gets a response, anybody responds over there, fine. But now you're targeting the audience that is really interested, those that are on the Fediverse. And if by chance you get anybody from Twitter, great. I don't know if there's a way to do the opposite.
Yeah, no problem. That's what I'm trying to organize. And I think, don't get me wrong, Nightwise, I personally have opinions about free software and stuff, but that should not in any way stop HPR going beyond the reaches. But there's only so much you can do in a day. And we definitely want to be pushing HPR to other platforms. For example, we should be on Facebook Video, we should be on YouTube, we're on Spotify and all the rest of those ones because they take our feed, but we should be definitely exposing to more people. And Claudia, going back to what you say there, I see that by putting Mastodon as our main, our feed bot is coming from the general RSS feed anyway. So whether we post to Twitter or whether we post to Mastodon, it's going to be coming from the same database. So I'm not sure if people will perceive that as us copying the Twitter feed or not. What do you think?
Okay, yeah, I see what you mean. No, I don't think they would. I kind of missed it because I was my sons were leaving to go to the gym, so I was just kind of attending to them for a bit.
No worries.
But no, I don't think it would. I mean, if it's just an RSS feed that's pushing out to everything, I don't think anybody's gonna look on that in any other way, because there's the Hacker News has a bot that posts stuff that basically an RSS feed of the Hacker News page. Mm-hmm. So it wouldn't be any different than that, I would imagine.
Yeah, I totally agree about the broadcasting. Please let us broadcast on as many channels as we can. I'm thinking more about the interaction with the community, where we might, aside from having a narrow niche funnel with a high content, with a high success rate, the people from the Fediverse that generally deliver the co-hosts, also have, a Discord server or something. I don't know if we're there. I might have missed it, but perhaps for people who don't know us, who don't know the community, we're getting old guys, doesn't know what IRC is. Maybe that's the way they'll find us.
We're not stuck in IRC. We happen to have an IRC thing. So please, I'm getting the feeling that, HPR is old and crusty because we use tried and true technology as well as the latest Blink stuff. Don't forget, we are using the latest Blink stuff. It's just we're not picking up traction on the latest Blink stuff. So if there are people, and feel free to volunteer yourself, who wants to set up a Discord server and wants to maintain and manage that, I'm absolutely fine with that. I will join it myself. But it's we need. HPR is a volunteer organization. If somebody has the expertise, post it to the mailing list. I imagine there would be no objection to it.
Here's the other word that sounds very ancient: mailing list. I'm not trying to agitate people. I'm just trying to.
I think you are.
But it's good. I mean, it's good to think about it. If the answer is going to be no, we're fine, then it's fine. But it's also nice to just pose the question once in a while.
Okay, if you want to poke me with a stick, that's absolutely fine. Because let's just take that off the here. Let's just assume we're both agreeing that if, from the point of view of HPR, if there's any service that people want us to be on, we can be on it. But you need to be to assist us with that. And the general rule of thumb that we have given down through the years is if you're going to be assisting HPR, you need to commit to at least 2 years of doing that. And the reason for doing that is so that if ever you pod fade or get tired or whatever, there's enough time for the other volunteers to be able to pick up the experience and to learn the code or whatever it is that you magic glue that you have put together, so that we can take over from you if ever you step away from the project. If you can't commit 2 years to us, then it's kind of pointless in the long-term project like this. So putting that aside for a moment, walk over to you here and poke you back with a stick. The reason we use IRC is, and the mailing list, is that it's been around. Since this project has started, we have seen Google One come and go. We've seen Google Reader come and go. We've seen several microservices that were going to be the latest thing that we built and integrated with suddenly disappear after only 5 years of service. And we're continuing on 15 years later, still going on, and the old reliable services continue to be there because they're old and reliable. What is this course more than a glorified GUI version of IRC?
IRC. I totally get it. I mean, I've been preaching this for a while when it comes to please don't stop running your own blog. I mean, don't completely commit to the Googles and the YouTubes and the Facebooks of this world, because if they change the rules, you're basically screwed. That's absolutely true. And I think that the self-hosted things that we do have value, and we should continue to do them just to give a counterweight to a popular culture that right now just says, you know, I create a login and a password to whatever and I have it, but I am completely dependent on some corporate goon who can decide whatever he wants tomorrow. I mean, if I see businesses here, small businesses, if Google kicks them off tomorrow, they can, or if Facebook kicks them out tomorrow, they can kind of close up shop when it comes to marketing. So I completely agree on our self-hosted and tried and true traditional technologies. I absolutely, they are still there and they still work, and I completely agree. But I just think it's fun to I don't know, poke the monkey from time to time and think about it and have a discussion like this. I mean, I think it's very productive.
I would argue the point here that there's limited resources, and that if people want to do something on HPR, you need to step up and volunteer and do it. Absolutely. You'll get the support from us.
Absolutely. And I think that aside, with that in mind, we continually need to look for new talent and new hosts and new insights.
Sorry, just got distracted there by the kids. Did I miss?
No. I was just saying that I completely agree with the fact that because HBR requires so much effort, I mean, there's a lot of energy that goes into it, we should put getting new hosts and getting fresh blood into the community as a high standard, not to end up becoming grumpy old men who yell, "Get off my lawn!" That would be bad. Bad.
No, we're quite, I mean, let me have a look and see how many new hosts we have this year.
John Culp, could you please turn on push to talk, please?
I can't. How do I do it?
Go into the configure your server settings.
Hang on.
You create a shortcut for a key to turn on your mic.
And I've got to hold that if I'm going to speak?
Walkie-talkie style.
Yeah, my God. Maybe I'll get out of here.
No!
No, stay. It's fun. It's walkie-talkie. You say over when you're done. Over.
Over, under.
Classic movie.
Somebody forgot to welcome the new year. Greetings to Japan.
That somebody would be you.
And six more in Tokyo, Seoul, and Jiang Bill. That was about 6 months ago.
9 minutes, the next one. Hi, John. Didn't see you there, by the way.
Hey, Ken. I was just trying to figure out how to make eSpeak not tell me that I had unmuted or muted myself. I think I've got it now.
John, you don't have to mute yourself. You just turn on the push to talk option and set up a shortcut key on your keyboard.
Yeah, I'm aware of that. However, the shortcut keys that seem to be available, I've got repetitive strain injury problems, and I don't want to keep having to push a key to do this. So I'm just using my clicker to click on them, because I have multiple ways to do user input here if I'm clicking instead of using a keystroke.
Okay, I understand.
Cool.
By the way, speaking of old technology, I've had some fun the last couple of days restoring a G4 Mac with classic LucasArts games. That was also a nice exercise in patience, though.
Nice. Very, very nice. Where did you post that? I know I saw you post something on that. And I'm not on Facebook. I'm not on Twitter. So it must have been somewhere else that I saw you post it.
I think I put something on our Discord or something. I'm not really sure. But I've been playing around with it. It's kind of like slow coffee opposed to espresso, where you have to wait for the coffee to drip through and kind of enjoy the moment. It's the same thing. It's slow. It's tedious. But there is so much software out there that you can just download and install that has been forgotten and abandoned. It's great.
Yeah, I have to do something. I have to, at least with the time I have left, I've had 2 weeks off since I work for the school system. You know, the students have winter break, and so all the employees do as well, and it's paid. So I was like, oh, I'm going to do something with some of my old equipment. But I kind of did. I kind of did. I have a Power Mac G5 that I wanted to get working again because it had an unsupported port of Debian, but Debian SID, and I had used it, I would say maybe 2 years ago, before I moved, and I was doing some music stuff on it, and then I stopped using it because I just didn't have space to use it. So it had been in storage for a while. I brought it back maybe about a month ago. I got it sort of updated. It was being 2 years behind on an unsupported port, it was a bit of a mission to get it updated. And then I think I kind of broke it. But then, and I stopped after a while, for maybe a few weeks up until last week, where I said, I'm gonna get this thing working. So I was able to update it. It seems to be temperamental. Some days it'll boot to the GUI. Some days it won't boot to the GUI. Other days it'll just give me command, you know, the command line login. And I don't know, but it's working and it's updated. So, but I do have my Quadro 650, and I have a Motorola StarMax 4000, which was one of the old PowerPC Mac clones from the 90s, mid 90s, late 90s, and I have actually installed BOS on that one. So it's running the PowerPC version, BOS Professional 5 dot something. I don't remember what it is, but very hard to find software for it. That's for sure.
I went for, I think there's a site called MacintoshGarden.org that gives you all of the images of the software, including the operating system. So I did an original, authentic reinstall of OS 9. That works great. I also have a G5 lying around, but I was thinking of putting Linux on it because I have an older 2009 iMac lying around. I yanked out the spinning disk, put in an SSD, extra RAM. It's now running Raspbian. Fantastic device. But I was thinking of indeed getting a G3, G4, G5 running with Linux, but I don't think that the ports are supported anymore. There's no longer a PPC supported version of Ubuntu or Debian, is there?
Well, Ubuntu, no, but Debian there is. I'll find the link and I'll post it in the chat. It's based on SID, so it's going to be a bit rough. Things will break, but you know, at least you'll be on the latest kernel. And not everything works. So like I'm trying to get Firefox running and I don't know if it's just my Mac or what, but every time I try to launch Firefox, it runs for a bit and then it crashes. And then I can't run it anymore until I delete the config files for Firefox. And then it just repeats the same thing. So what I have installed is NetSurf and Lynx. There's no Chromium. So it's very, you know, it's very hit or miss with that. What I do know is that the BSDs do support the PowerPC still, the big endian PowerPCs, because Debian does support PowerPC, but the little endian ones, so like the Power9 stuff, the server kind of stuff.
Yeah, I was thinking, I think I can get my hands on an older G3 first generation iMac, and I'd be fine just running a command line interface. That'd be nice as well. So basically, I don't know, put some music on there, turn it into an audio player. I have the other G4 iMac I have in the studio where we broadcast the webinars. It's basically in the background, in the decor, doing a slideshow. So they don't have to be, you know, cutting edge productive, but just, you know, to have them do something, that would be nice.
I'd like to send out notification to everybody to please post your show notes in the Etherpad site.
Y'all, I'm sorry. I've tried to do the push to talk thing and something is not applying properly. I get it said. It says that the certain key that I've chosen is enabled, but then when I get in here, my lips just turn red without pushing the button. So I don't know what I'm doing wrong here.
Look under the configure menu and make sure text to speech is not selected.
It's not. It is not selected under settings. I go to shortcuts, right? Function push to talk. I've chosen alt right and it says it's fine, but
is,
it's not.
Is transmission set to push to talk?
Yep. Well, transmission, where's transmission?
Under the audio input.
Okay, hang on, hang on.
And make sure you have the advanced.
There we go.
Advanced button selected down at the bottom.
Okay, working now. Ooh, thank you. I need somebody. I had not checked the transmission push to talk button. That's why it was not working right. My apologies. I don't use Mumble very often. It's been 2 years probably since the last time I've used it.
It's not a problem. It's just when you don't have that turned on, sometimes it causes interference with other people while they're talking.
I am well aware of the issues. I might chime in on the Mac G4 topic. I've got one over there, and for a couple of years, it has functioned as a beautiful just case on the floor with all of the guts ripped out because I like the way it looks, and I didn't want to just throw it away. And so now it is a coffee table.
So, all right. It is beautiful with its guts ripped out. I must say there are still beautiful things. I mean, I've even thought of getting one of those towers, the desktops, yanking everything out, just throwing all of my Raspberry Pis in there, and then closing it up and putting a LED light in it, and going like, there, it's a computer. It's nice now.
That's pretty much what I actually had a Raspberry Pi in there for a while. I had my Ethernet switch in there. It had a bunch of cables and a power supply, like a power strip. And I just jammed a bunch of stuff in there and then closed it up. This is the desktop case. You know, it's the tower thing with the kind of curved molded plastic sides and the Big Apple logo on the side. I think I picked it up at Goodwill for about $10 years ago. And used it as a computer for a little while, but then it didn't perform well enough. And so I ripped everything out and I like the case. Apple makes really nice looking cases. So now it serves the purpose of holding my coffee while I'm reading.
I need to convince my wife that we need a coffee table that looks like a Mac. Maybe two of them and then just a plexiglass sheet in between. And then, yeah, that would be nice. The upside is I go to the thrift store from time to time or to their local recycling center and I do a heist. Because at the local recycling center, you're not allowed to take anything home. And I love just looking in the bins and seeing what's in there. And sometimes I bring more home than I take to the recycling center and my wife always gets annoyed. But I have found the most beautiful things. I mean, it's amazing what people throw out.
Indeed. I'm at a point in my life and my career where I make a decent salary, but I still haunt the thrift stores just because of, I don't see why I should pay more for something when I can get it for quite a lot less.
So I just dropped the link. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to do the greetings and Happy New Year to Western Australia and Australia, you class at 10:15 a.m. Eastern time, which was about 2 minutes ago.
Happy New Year to everyone there. So, yeah, I dropped a URL in chat. It goes to cdimage.debian.org/cdimage/ports/snapshots/2020-12-03. That is the snapshot as of that date for the Debian installer for a few ports that are not supported. They're unofficially supported, I guess you could say. They're unofficial ports. So you have there for alpha, for the PA RISC, HP PA RISC CPU, Itanium, the Motorola 68K platform, 32-bit and 64-bit PowerPC, and SPARC 64.
All right.
Use at your own risk.
So, Claudio, I see on Mastodon that you bought a Pinephone.
Actually, that was given to me by a friend that he DJs from time to time over on Tilde Radio. And he sent it to me. He told me he had one, and if I was interested, I was like, yeah, sure. And I said, you know, I'll pay, what do you want for it? And he was like, no, I'll send it to you. It's just, you know, it's been sitting, it's just been collecting dust we're here with me, so I'll send it to you. I'm like, well, at least let me cover for shipping. He was like, no, just don't worry about it. So I was like, okay. This is a little belated birthday gift from earlier this month. So I was like, all right. Just recently bought a battery for it because that's the only thing that didn't have a battery. So I bought a battery for it that's compatible with the Samsung Galaxy J7, I guess it is, or J7, the 2015 model. And I have it there. I've been playing around with it. This is the post-market OS community edition with the Phosh PH OS interface. And it's intriguing. It's intriguing. It is rough around the edges, in my opinion, though, to try and use. I don't know if I'd use it as a daily driver, but I've been thinking of reflashing it with the kind of their Edge version of the OS, but with Plasma Mobile as the interface to see what that's like.
Are you going to flash it or just get an SD card and pop it in there and try something else?
Yeah, I have all the SD cards I've got, I'm sure I can use one of them and just at least to run it that way and then, you know, flash it over to the EMMC to try and use it that way.
Well, there's also somebody came out with a multi-boot image that has like, I want to say it was like 8 different operating systems on it that you can try out. From everything between all of the variants of post-market ROS to Arch Linux ARM, Mobian, Sailfish OS, all sorts of ones that you can try out that you can flash onto an SD card and use. But you're right, I got one. I got the UbiPorts one, and it's a really fun device, but it's definitely not close to being able to be a daily driver just yet.
As I played around with the Fairphone this year, to review for a customer. I was running Android, but it is something that it's more open on the hardware side where you can completely swap out the components and they're all made kind of like, you know, durable and aware of both the environment and the people that build it and stuff. But that's not the same thing, is it?
No, from my understanding, the Pine community is coming up with ways that you can swap out some of the components. I know they came out with a newer motherboard that you can swap into it, and they're talking about different ways to put like a battery pack on the back, and then they had like a battery type thing where they're looking into like a slide out keyboard for it as well. There's all sorts of things that they're doing with it.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I saw with the Fairphone. You can basically, if you get a screwdriver with it, by the way, and you can almost completely take it apart and swap out the parts yourself.
The problem with the Fairphone is that they have binary blobs in there, and now their earlier phones are completely useless because the source code for the binary blobs weren't released, and they have mentioned that that was an oversight.
Too
that
bad.
They were warned about at the time, but they didn't do anything about.
Do you know, by the way, Ken, that that's a Dutch company that makes it?
Yeah. And I think it's very disappointing that happened. But that's an issue that the Pine 64 has been struggling with, is trying to get manufacturers to release their binary blobs.
I think it's a measure of how little I followed this kind of thing, but I'd never even heard of the Pine phone until you guys mentioned it just now.
Well, if you go to Birmingham, you can pick up mine.
No, thanks. I'm good.
I'm just going to drop off again while I read the privacy statements of Bots in Space.
Okay, I'm going to...
Bots in Space, is that a novel or something?
No, it's who posted it in there?
That was me. I posted
Archer 72,
Or Archer 72 did, yeah.
Yeah, I was looking for a... an entry into the Fediverse for a bot, and Archer 72 had the link. Bots in Space, perfect domain name for HPR. Back in a bit.
See you, Ken.
Oh, by the way, did anyone catch Enigma's latest show about building a server where we can all drop off code and content and exchange it that way?
I have not heard that.
When was that?
I listened to it this morning, so I think it's one of the latest shows.
I'll confess, I've hardly listened to any shows in the last 8 or 9 months. I mean, there was a time where I was posting shows all the time, and then pandemic happened, and I've never been busier because of the position I hold at the university, and I like can't even listen to the shows.
I totally understand that. I went like, no more commutes. I'm going to have so much time to listen to podcasts. And that, well, basically didn't happen. The time I went out with no more commutes has been eaten up by more work.
That could definitely happen.
Just listen at 5x speed and you'll catch up real quick.
I listened at 1.7 already, and that's, I mean, I could listen at 2x. That'd be my max.
Yeah, same for me. The funny thing, though, is when I listen to everybody at normal speed, everyone sounds like they're drunk.
Exactly, yeah.
Everybody is.
Hey, that's a good way to hide it, too.
Oh, by the way, that would be show HBR 3239, Community Project Proposal by Enigma.
Yeah, I saw a mention of that on, I think I saw it. Yeah, it's an episode. I have yet to listen to it. I have it on my podcatcher.
Hey guys, I'm going to drop off for a bit. I'll be back in a couple of hours. Have fun till then.
See ya.
Take it easy, Nightwise. If I don't see you, Happy New Year.
About 5-7 hours to go here, so we'll be fine. We're not going anywhere.
Yeah, just in case I don't get back by the time I get to talk to you again. Just have a Happy New Year.
All right, roger, same things. Bye.
Claudio, are you in Miami? Do I recall that correctly?
Yes, I'm in Miami, Florida.
Okay. Seems like I can recall seeing your username going back many, many years. Were you part of the Linux Outlaws crowd way back in the day?
No, but I was a co-host on Linux Basement with Chad Wallenberg.
Okay. I don't know that I ever listened to that one. Maybe I saw you on Identica.
Yes, I was on Identica too. And you didn't miss much with Linux Basement.
And you're in
Chad and I tend to be self-deprecating when it comes to that podcast.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think I know Chad. Claudio, you're involved in some kind of music production too, right?
Just as a hobby. Have a small setup. I have, well, right now, soon I should be setting everything up again the way I had it. I have an old Kawai K4 synth. That was my first pro synth, I guess you could say. And in 2005, I got myself a Yamaha S08, the weighted full 88 keys. And that's been my go-to since. And with that, I use my Linux laptop. I run Fedora, and I've got some music apps on there. I've been using Qtractor, been using Hydrogen, some software synths like AM Synth. What's the other one? Yoshimi. Just recently I was playing around with Odin 2, which is amazing. And I've been looking at giving Ardor a shot since it now has MIDI support, so I might be able to do what Qtractor's been doing for me. And I can overcome some of the issues I'm having with Qtractor still. As a matter of fact, Pat Davila from the Linux Link Tech Show had uploaded an episode where he and I discussed the state of Linux audio in 2020. It was a lot of fun.
Oh yeah,
that's cool.
I was gonna give that a quick listen last night, and just before going to sleep, it's like, oh, this should be like what, 5 minutes, and then it says 52 minutes. Okay, I'll save it for later.
Yeah, I rambled quite a bit.
Hey guys, what's up?
Howdy.
Well, hello there.
Happy pre-New Year.
I said Linux Link Tech Show, and then you showed up, Joe.
Awesome. I missed yesterday's, and then I missed last week's.
Well, I think that can be forgiven, given the
holiday season,
the time of the year. Yeah.
Yeah. Yesterday, I had a Zoom party with friends that I haven't seen all year, and then last week was Christmas.
Yeah, it's been rather quiet. About his house.
Yeah.
When's the finishing date on that again?
I think they moved it back to like 2038.
Just in time for the Unix disaster.
Yeah.
Is that the end of the 32-bit era?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's.
I think we might see that happen before we see Joel in the house. Yeah, I still have yesterday's Linux and LinkTech show still waiting to be listened to on my podcatcher. I haven't even started. I've just jumped in here to chit chat with all you.
Yeah, I just woke up a few minutes ago. I still have a lovely hangover from last night's Zoom party, so
it's really disconcerting how quiet it gets when everyone's microphones are off.
I wonder if that has something to do with those who have been involved with audio and kind of tend to cringe at just utter open silence.
I think we've all gotten used to muting ourselves now. I mean, I've had hundreds of Zoom meetings in the last 9 months, and pretty much everyone now knows to turn your mic off when you're in a meeting. At first, it was pretty chaotic.
I still have some coworkers that haven't learned that.
Lately, who doesn't turn off the mic is whoever the big boss in the room is. They usually leave their mic hot.
The one running the meeting?
Yeah, or else the highest ranking person in the meeting, the provost of the university or something like that. You
know? No, half the time still my supervisor has to tell some of the other people on the conference to mute their mic.
Yeah, at least once during a conference, it's everybody, please mute your mics.
Well, I'm hoping that, I don't know if I mentioned, I think, a little bit on my recent episode that I'm starting a new job basically tomorrow at the university. I've been the director of the School of Music and Performing Arts for the last 5 years after 15 years as just music faculty. And then starting tomorrow, I'm going to be the interim associate dean at the college level. So I'm a step higher up in administration.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
I guess, yeah. I still don't know exactly what the job will entail, but I know that I will go from having about 60 people reporting to me to having zero reporting to me, which I think could be a welcome relief.
Yeah, I was about to say,
that associate dean level and have less people reporting to you.
Well, it's that the associate dean is kind of like the right-hand man to the dean. And the dean.
So you're handling all the people that are reporting to the dean.
Well, not really. I mean, I'm not directly in the reporting structure. It's a kind of a mid-level administrative position that handles things, represents the college at various on committees on campus and at events, and stands in for the dean, has signatory power like the dean in the dean's absence, but there's not that many people reporting. I don't think anybody reports directly to me. I mean, the dean only has, what, 7 or 8 people reporting directly to him, and then each department head and director has a lot under them. I don't know. Anyway, I feel like I could be totally wrong about this, but I feel like my headaches will go down as a result of this change in position. Because one thing I learned about being the director / department head is that whenever there's a problem in the School of Music, it's my problem. At first, I didn't understand this, and I kept asking, is this my problem? And the answer was always, yes, it's my problem. Perhaps an upshot of the change in position will mean I can record episodes for HPR again? I don't know. We will see. I've got a list of topics, and it's a matter of sitting down and doing it.
Well, if you end up with more free time due to your new position, just do more podcasts.
Yeah, you know, there's certain things. Somebody on my Twitter feed today posted a message like, okay, so I finally took care of this thing that's been on my to-do list since March. It took me 5 minutes. You know, I've got a number of things of that kind that I started way back in March and didn't finish, that if I just did them, it wouldn't take very long. And, you know, recording a podcast takes a little longer than 5 minutes, but most of the time it doesn't take more than an hour.
Depends on the podcast.
It does depend on the podcast. I've gotten good enough at it where I can usually take care of the entire process in less than an hour.
Yeah, as long as you have all your settings dialed in and you're the only person in the room, then yeah, 5 minutes.
Yeah. I do not typically do co-hosted ones, although I've done a handful, a couple with one with Windigo, one with NY Bill, a couple with Dave Morris, but typically I go solo.
Well, add this one to the mix because you're co-hosting right now.
Ah, okay. I hope my audio level is not too high.
No, you sound good.
Excellent. I tried to check on it beforehand going into my volume controls. It looks like it registers but will not distort and clip. So hopefully it's going to be okay.
You can always join Tilts and Linux Ludcast. I'll let anybody on those shows, I swear.
If you're going to go on Linux Link Tech Show, just make sure to turn up your gain so you blow everyone's ears out, all
right? Right, and make
sure... Just type the protocol.
Make sure every time Joel talks, you have something to say over top of him.
So you step on toes and you turn it up really loud.
The toes you step on is Joel's toes.
Okay.
That's not hard
to do. Poor Joel. Everyone rags on him.
Well, that's because, you know, he has the same three topics and they get kind of boring. I mean, it's either his house, his CPAP machine, and I know I'm almost as bad because I talk to Joel about those things, but... his house, his CPAP machine, and his new position at work.
What about 3D printing? You missed that one.
we haven't talked about 3D printing in a while. Or at least Joel hasn't. At least not much.
You know what I do miss from the show? I miss the bets that everyone took on what Joel had for dinner.
He hasn't been showing up late, or at least not that late. But yeah, that used to be fun. We used to have more people on the pre-show, too. I mean, Rich hasn't been coming on as much, and so it's usually me, Pat, and Dan.
Man, I've been listening to Tilts. Jeez, when was the first time I listened? I think it was around maybe 2005. I've been listening since around then. Not since the early days. I think that the episode that got me hooked on the show was the RMS episode, and that was before my time. That was before I started listening. But I heard that, and I said, oh, I got to check this out.
Kind of randomly ended up on there in 2016.
I don't think I've ever heard it. I've heard of it, and I might have tried to listen to an episode, but I think that might be one of the podcasts where I was turned off by the uneven audio quality.
Yeah. There's not a lot of post-processing that goes into it.
Political quality.
Or Dan compiling a kernel during the show, or playing a game during the show, or...
No, fine.
It's not usually Dan playing a game during the show. It's Joel's son.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know. Dan hasn't been doing that, but I remember there was a time where, and it's like legendary now, that Dan was compiling a kernel during the show, and yeah. Everything just died. Of course, he could get on and verify all of that, because I know I'm wrong on something regarding that.
I'm pretty sure he's planning on being off sometime today. Probably Joel, too.
Which Dan is this? The only Dan I know related Washko. To Linux podcasts is okay. I've heard of him.
Yeah, there's Dan Washko and Dan Fry.
Dan Lynch has been on lately.
Yeah, he was doing Floss Weekly for a while, but I haven't heard him on lately.
Who? Dan Lynch?
Dan Lynch, yeah.
Yeah, I haven't really heard him since Linux Outlaws.
Yeah,
he
when
had some health issues that took him away for a while, now he's back.
Well, that's too bad. I'm glad to hear he's back. I always liked Dan very much.
Gentle giant.
Hey, Ken, how you been? It's been a year.
It's been a year. that sums it up all right, yeah. It's been a year. I've been good. Getting a bit understanding what a prisoner might feel like locked in their cell all day.
Yeah, it starts driving you batty after a while. But the nice thing is, you know, I can, if it's not pouring rain, I can get the bike and go biking at 2 a.m.
I started riding my recumbent bike again during the pandemic, and it's been excellent. I had not ridden it in a couple of years, and it was left over at my other house. We got a new house, and then we started renting the old one to someone else, and I left my recumbent in the storage shed over there. And then one day I decided I'm going to go get that and start riding, because during the initial stages of the lockdown, like, there was nobody on the roads.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Man, it's like the best thing on a bicycle is when there's nobody driving.
Well, especially on a recumbent. I'd be worried about riding one in my area around here, because nobody gives a shit and they will run you over.
Yeah, it's hard to see. And I've got that flag sticking up and waving around, but I still would not. I still try to stay off of any big, busy main roads.
Recumbents are a little bit expensive.
I built mine, and it's...
Like, custom?
Yeah.
Designed and built, or you...
I used the plans, but I did a whole HPR episode about it. Maybe, probably my most popular episode was the recumbent bike building episode. I did that 6 or 7 years ago, so you could listen to it and check out the photos, but...
spawned another series on who else built?
There was another guy who had got started on that anyway, and I keep waiting for a follow-up. And maybe I've just
finished it. Yeah, you missed it, I think.
Yeah, that probably happened while I was not paying attention. But I should go back and find that. It sounded very promising. Anyway, it didn't cost nearly as much to build it as to buy it. I think the total amount I spent was $300.
That's not bad at all.
And 140 of that was getting the powder coat done professionally.
Brian in Ohio was the guy who did it. He just finished it. It's under the Bicycle Hacking series.
Okay, I'll go check that out for sure. I definitely want to hear how that came out. Mine still rides beautifully. And so I get out on the weekends and ride it for 4 or 5 miles, and it's so comfortable. It's really fun, and it's always a conversation piece, too.
So did you fabricate the parts, or did you...
No, they're hacked together from other bicycles. Okay. You take donor bicycles, cut them all up, and put them back together in a different way, and braze weld them. There's a guy up in Wisconsin, I believe. I think it was Wisconsin or Minnesota somewhere, who has plans online. He calls it recycled recumbents, and he will build them, but he also just freely shared his plans. And so I took the plans and found a couple of donor bikes that I got for free, and then picked up other bits and pieces here and there. And I did it. It was super fun, and it's made a bike that's really great to ride.
I was just about to say hello to Lohan G, and he dropped off. But hello to Urugami.
And I requested an account on Bots in Space.
Is K-Wish on right now?
He sure is.
Hey, K-Wish, how's it going?
Doing good. How about yourself?
Like I said, a little hungover, but going pretty good. Been an interesting year.
Yes, very interesting.
Tell me about it.
Is Honky on or just recording right now?
He usually jumps on with another session, Honky Magoo-Mobile, when he speaks.
Okay.
So going back a bit earlier in the conversation, I heard everybody talking about the Raspberry Pi 4 or the 400, I think it was. Anybody look at getting that?
Probably not anytime soon for me. The kit is between $70 and $100, but I don't need another computer, as weird as that sounds right now.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I looked at the 400 and I was like, oh boy, I really, really, the geek in me really wants this.
Absolutely.
But it's just not a practical thing for me right now.
Well, it's slightly more powerful than the 4. And yeah, it has a keyboard, or it's built into a keyboard. But other than that, how is it more useful than my 4? Only comes with the 4 gig of RAM. I can get a 4 with 8 gig of RAM.
Yeah, I'm sure. I know there was talk about why they didn't come out with an 8. I'm sure we'll see one later next year.
Yeah.
Or this year, if you're already in 2021. Got to keep the demand for it.
Y'all, I'm a take off. It's been fun hanging out for a little while. Happy New Year, everybody.
And Happy New Year to you too, John. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, you bet. I'm gonna try to record more episodes in the new year. I got to have at least a couple to my name in order to keep Ken off my back. See y'all.
Ken, you got it recorded, so there you go.
I'll do it.
I think, with regards to the Raspberry Pi, I haven't seen that 4,000 unit locally in South Africa, but it sounds like, is it a closed unit?
Yeah,
it's basically kind of like it kind of looks like, or it tries to resemble like a Commodore 64 or VIC-20, like that.
Amiga.
It's basically a computer, Amiga, or like the old Atari computers. It's a computer inside of the keyboard itself.
It does kind of look like a smaller Atari 600.
And I think it has a GPIO header exposed.
Yes.
Okay, so at least I didn't take away from the hackability of it.
No, they wouldn't. I think it was all to satisfy Ken Fallon's obsession with, Raspberry Pi computers.
There's still one thing that I want to try and build at some point, and I've seen it in some of the White Hat blogs, where you take a Raspberry Pi, you install a GSM unit on it, and then use it to bypass firewalls. So if you get physical access to a building, you can connect via GPRS, and then you're basically on the local network. I think that sounds like a fun project.
Wait, sorry, how do you bypass the firewall then? You're just going through another network then, or?
Yeah, so basically from external, you are blocked with firewall, so you cannot access the local area network. But if you have access to the building, you can install this device on a network port, and then from your machine, you just connect to the GPRS IP address with SSH. And then you basically use the Ethernet port that's connected to the LAN to navigate the local network.
So an SSH bridge.
Yeah, basically like that.
That's kind of what I'm doing with my old one of the Raspberry Pi Model B. So that's the version 1 Model B. I got NetBSD on it, and it works quite well.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting if you can walk into a client's building. We have to do some testing, and then you present them with this, with a report saying that, listen, your firewall is set up good, everything's fine, but by the way, I do have access to your local network, and this is how. It's time to look at your physical security as well.
Yeah, I'm not sure how well they will take that.
Well, if they pay you to find flaws and you give them a flaw, then at least they can address it.
Yeah, I guess.
All right, guys, I'm going to jump off as well. We're going to go to a barbecue with some friends. I'll probably be back in about 5 hours from now.
Barbecue. Enjoy and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Thanks.
Happy New Year.
Thanks, you too, guys. Yeah, in South Africa, we call it a braai.
I'm going to leave myself logged in, but I'll be back in a few minutes.
Yeah, I think I'm going to drop off for a little bit. I'll try and be back later. I want to see if I hit the gym before anything. And then just got to take care of a couple of things here.
Sure. Have a nice one.
If by chance I'm not back in time, Happy New Year to you all. But I think I'll be back.
Happy New Year, Claudio.
Likewise.
Okay, we need to say Happy Year, New Year, and greetings to China and 12 more. Beijing, Hong Kong, Manila, Singapore. Happy New Year.
Is anybody else excited for the Doctor Who special?
Take that as a just me.
I didn't watch the last season yet. Latest season. What was the name of the special? Something Revolution of the Daleks or something?
Yeah. I'm checking right now to see what time it's going to be available.
Like, big Dalek specials are always fun.
Yeah. Two of the companions are leaving.
Sorry?
Two of the companions are leaving.
Oh, no.
Nope, we can't hear you. Looks like your mic is muted. No, that's John Pertwee. You spelled it wrong. 6:45 p.m.
Hello.
Hey, what's up?
Not much. Just trying to get Archer figured out here. How's it going, Joe?
Not bad. Debating what I want to eat for breakfast.
That tends to be a simple decision for me.
Better now?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, I had it on the laptop microphone.
Well, glad you got it fixed.
Thanks.
So how's it going?
Good. I was trying to tell the synopsis of Heroes because then nobody else was on.
They're all dead.
I'm still in the morning brain fog. My wonderful wife let me sleep in, and I slept in entirely too late.
My wife went off to work. They don't let her off on New Year's Eve.
That is unfortunate.
So that leaves me home with the cat and the dog.
It could be worse.
My dog sleeps all day anyways, so it doesn't matter. And the cat hasn't bothered me except for food.
Can you send your dog to teach my dog how to just do that? Because mine is just a ball of blah all the time.
How big is your dog?
He's a little terrier mix.
Oh, she's a corgi.
Yeah, this was a stray that just showed up at our house, and we took in, and he's the vet thinks he's a little over a year old, but he is definitely still puppy.
We rescued her, and she's 10 years old, and so she's pretty quiet now. And the cat is a cranky old man. He's 7, but he acts like he's older.
Yeah, our cat has to be 105 at this point. He has, like, 2 good teeth and just will not tolerate the dog at all. It's kind of funny to watch them because the dog thinks that when the cat smacks him upside the head that they're just playing, and they're really not.
Yeah, it's a love-hate relationship here, too. Funny, they'll sleep on the bed together, but then they'll fight like all cats and dogs.
Well, it's funny because the cat was another thing that we just took in, but we got him after he was declawed as an adult, which is a big no-no. And so he doesn't have any claws, so it does just look like he's playing, but he's trying as hard as he can to knock that dog out and just can't do it.
So when I thought I was unmuted, I was talking about how my only entertainment is a Kodi box, and I recently got to put a 8-terabyte drive on it.
Nice. I used to have a Kodi box, but it did not often pass the approval of the spouse, so I had to eventually take it out, and she just does regular TV stuff now, but I enjoyed it a lot.
I don't even use it directly on the TV that much anymore. I just stream to my laptop. Stand it.
I almost never watch anything on an actual TV.
No, usually the small screen. I'll sit in my bedroom and watch the end of a show by there.
Yeah, that's been part of my project while I've been off for a month, is trying to catch up on TV shows that I woefully fell behind on.
That's me too. I don't have any modern shows because I don't have broadcast TV.
Yeah, everything I've been watching has been through Netflix or Disney Plus. That's pretty much most of the things that I want to watch are on those two services.
Disney Plus for Mandalorian or anything else?
Yeah, Mandalorian is the big thing. But we have a 2-year-old, so Disney Plus is right up her alley. she's a huge Mickey fan, so that works out to our benefit. And I like, just when I want something on that's not something I need to pay attention to, like 90s Spider-Man or X-Men cartoons are just perfect for that.
Audio test.
Hey, we got sound.
Hey.
Hello. Good.
Problem solved.
Yeah, it was transmission in the configurations. I was voice activity or push to talk. This is continuous.
So push to talk wasn't working?
True.
That's less than helpful.
I'll just use the mute button.
Cool.
I'd like to say I owe you a show. I started recording things, but I need to edit things together.
That's cool. We always like new shows. And don't feel bad. I've got like 5 of them on my hard drive that I need to get ready, including one I'm about to record. And it looks like Claudio's in here, but he's not. But it's going to be my reaction to his last one about Linux audio.
Introductions. I need to edit. It's hard to know what people will be interested in, and I can go off on tangents.
That's fine. We like tangents.
Yeah, I was going to say, best not even concern yourself with that. Just put it out. it's amazing how much sometimes somebody will post a show about a thing, and where they go is more interesting than the original topic of their episode. So, yeah, I wouldn't concern myself too much about that. But a show is better than no show.
I'll do it. I mean, I appreciate what I've been hearing from people. You know, it's encouraging.
Yeah, we're all just figuring it out as we go. So don't concern yourself too much with quality or any of that stuff.
Hey, Taj, how's he doing?
Hey, what's up, Honky? Just sitting here fighting with Jack.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Me and Linux Audio are not getting along real well right now.
Really? What made you want to play with Jack?
So, basically, it's kind of I'm calling it a secret project, although it's not a secret project. Anybody who knows who I hang out with and what I'm doing recently probably can figure it out. I was asked to write some music for a show, and I haven't composed anything really since I made the move to Linux, because Linux Audio is a dumpster fire. And so I was like, okay, this is the excuse to kind of get back into it. And it's a mess. Just trying to get things to a place where I can write is troubling.
From my understanding, Ubuntu Studio is supposed to be really good with just the fact of the way they have Jack set up, and there is a certain version of the Linux kernel that really plays well with the audio, I believe. I'm not very well versed in Linux audio, but that's what I've heard.
Yeah, you can use a real-time kernel. I mean, for me, it's Archer didn't happen, or an Archer derivative and it didn't happen. Yeah, I mean, I could get it to sort of work. It's just the, so when I was doing like this professionally and doing it all the time, I was using Max because that's kind of what we learned in school and it was the industry standard. And it's just nice that everything auto routes, or, you know, the only problem is sometimes you want it to route a certain way and it won't. But with this, you have to explicitly patch everything the way you want it. And sometimes it's like, I don't want to spend 15 minutes patching everything together. I just want to sit down and get ideas out. And I'm just not to the point where that's fluid enough. And in the past, that's what stopped me from doing it, is I'll have an idea, or I'll have like all my little doodles that I have that I've written down to like play with. And I'll sit down at the keyboard and try to get it in the computer. And it's just like, ugh, I got to spend 20 minutes patching everything together to talk to the DAW, or to talk to MuseScore to put it in. And it's that's been the barrier to entry. Now that I have an excuse to do it, I mean, I'm doing it, but it is still frustrating.
Yeah, I understand that.
It's one of those, like, I like the power aspect of it. I like that it is so intricate, and it's really sort of a power user thing. But sometimes I don't want a power user thing. I just want it to work. But a lot of audio stuff for Linux requires Jack, and so you have to jump through that hoop. Maybe once I get all my presets done and set, it'll be a lot easier.
Yeah, everybody I talk to has always been meaning to learn Jack or meaning to set up Jack, and then I don't know of anybody that actually has become an expert in Jack.
It seems like people, pretty much what I just said from looking around, if people poke around at it until they get to work what they want to work, and then they just, that's all the further they go with it, because it's like, okay, I got it to work. Just don't touch it. Don't breathe in the direction of it. And then everything will just function the way it should. There's lots of people online that have tutorials and stuff. But the problem is if you're using, you know, this distro or that distro, it seems like things are very particular. Like there's really two Jack control programs. There's QJack control, which is sort of the, that's the hardcore power user one, where nothing is configured when you open it up. And then there's Cadence. And I spent a whole day trying to get Cadence to work because it's more user-friendly, and it just wouldn't talk to the Jack D-bus. So it was like, okay, I guess I'm switching into hard mode here because that's the only option I have. But it's just, there's a better way to do it. I'm not smart enough to come up with a better way. I hear PipeWire is going to fix a lot of this, but as of right now, it's just, it's tedious more than anything.
Hey, Taj. Hey, everyone again.
Hey, Claudio, my man. We're speaking your language.
Hello.
Yeah, I came in at the right time.
So Linux audio makes me want to gouge my eyeballs out with a spoon.
I can relate.
Why is it everybody that does Linux audio says that exact phrase?
Linux audio
I hate
sucks.
X-Runs. I hate X-Runs. And have I mentioned I hate X-Runs?
I have so far not had a lot of problems with that. It happens occasionally,
well,
but not often.
I haven't tried lately since I've upgraded my laptop with an SSD. It might be better. The situation might be better, but I guess I'll have to see. I also upgraded to a better version of the laptop I had before. So I went from an i3 processor to an i5 processor. Went from, well, it had 6 gigs of RAM. Now it has 8. And I just got an SSD for it. So
yeah, all those should help.
Yeah, I had mentioned it earlier. Pat from Linux Link Tech Show and I did an episode on the state of Linux audio in 2020, which was, I thought I was going to be a mess on that one, but I wasn't too half bad with the information.
Yeah, actually, I listened to that yesterday, and because I'm fighting with it currently, and it was helpful, but it was also, for me, it was frustrating because I was like, these guys already have it figured out and I don't.
Yeah, I had to sit down, just kind of take the time one day and said, I'm going to try and get Jack configured the way I wanted to. And actually, I did most of it through not QJack CTL. I did it through QTractor because it has a connections button where you can set up the MIDI connections and everything. It's super easy there. So I just avoid configuring it through QJack CTL completely. Though the one that's in Fedora has now an option where you actually get Because I remember when I was still on Mac OS X, the way you would connect the devices through MIDI and audio, it was all graphical. So you kind of have like a visual representation of everything, and you just run lines to it. And this version, the latest version that's on Fedora, it actually was there a couple of versions back too. There's a way of doing it visually and not through just running lines from that row of devices and everything. So you can have like an oval with the name of the device, and it has that in and out, and then you could just run the lines to however you want to run it to get the MIDI flow or the audio flow.
Yeah, that is sort of my understanding from watching a bunch of videos and trying to get it figured out, is that that is more, the program Cadence is more like the Mac side of things, which is what I'm used to as well. Granted, I was used to it like 20 years ago, so it's definitely probably changed since then, but it is more
right.
Graphical and things like that. Although you can do a little bit of that with QJet control, but it is just kind of jank. But I couldn't get Cadence to run to save my life. So I'm, like I said, I just switched to hard mode, and I'll learn it with QJet control. And
I think I tried Cadence a while back, and I had similar problems. If I remember correctly, I had similar problems that you had, and I just said, the hell with it. Let me stick with what works. It's rougher, it's harder, but it works. So yeah, but I just do the since I was using QTractor, I just did the connections for MIDI that way, and for the audio too.
Yeah, I haven't decided on what DAW I'm going to wind up using, because sort of what I've been doing is I'm old school. I sit down with like manuscript paper and write out ideas. The only reason I ever used technology when I was writing before was to make sheet music for musicians. That was it. So that's how I think, and I'm writing down ideas like that, and then I've got to figure out how to get that MIDI into a DAW and start playing with it. And then I did get my guitar system routed into Jack and into a really cool like amp modeler and effects processor, so that was a win. I like that, but then getting that to talk to our door or whatever I wind up using is going to be the next battle I have to fight.
I'm thinking of probably switching over to Ardor, but I actually got to sit down and do it.
Yeah, I kind of narrowed it down to either that or LMMS. LMMS seems simpler, so I don't know. Ardor is, like I was used to using Pro Tools, and Ardor looks more complicated than Pro Tools. So, it's just, what do I want to learn, and how much time do I want to put into it?
Yeah, I had started way back with some sequencing software. I was using MasterTrax Pro at the time. And then from that, I moved to GarageBand on OS X, which kind of was similar to that. And then when I left Mac OS X and I started doing things mainly on Linux, the only one that I found that was close to the look and feel, more the feel, I didn't care so much about the look, but the feel, was QTractor. But like I mentioned in that episode, there's still some things that bother me about it. Especially when it comes to mixing down to a file. So if Ardor's MIDI implementation is more robust than when I first heard about it, then I'm going to move over to that.
If I remember correctly, like a year ago or something, there was a big hubbub about them adding a bunch of MIDI stuff, so I'm sure it's gotten better.
Yeah, we'll see. I've got, three more days of my winter break vacation, so at some point in that time, I guess I can test it out.
We're on a similar schedule because that's pretty much what I'm doing.
Yeah. But yeah, if you want a really good software synth, Odin 2, definitely recommend it.
Yeah, I had a... there's a YouTuber, I think his name's like Onfa or something like that.
Onfa, yeah.
Yeah, he does lots of stuff. And I saw he has a thing about it, and I wanted to check that out. I've got a list on my desk of videos of his that I want to see, because his videos have been some of the things that have got me the furthest. So he's a good reference to get started.
Yeah, I added it to the show notes post post upload, and I guess Ken or someone, one of the janitors for the custodians for Hacker Public Radio added it to the episode entry.
Gotta love our janitors.
Yep. So what other software do you use for music?
To be completely honest, what I guess I told them before you hopped on, this is the first time I've sat down and tried to write music in probably 20 years. Gotcha. It used to be my job, but now
yeah.
I haven't done it in so long, and I haven't done it since I made the switch to Linux. So it's really, at this point, just getting myself back used to writing things again, which has been remarkably difficult, and getting over the barrier of actually getting that stuff into a computer to manipulate, because I was used to writing music and handing it to musicians and having like real instruments,
right.
Which has always been a limiting factor for me because that's kind of the sound I like. So I'm using this as an excuse to like play with more synth sounds and things like that, because I hate like orchestral synths. They're terrible and they make my ears want to bleed. So
yeah, I don't blame you.
Playing with new sounds and trying to like expand my vocabulary into new things is the goal.
Gotcha. Yeah. Well, because I hate myself so much, I have been curious to do what I'm doing on Linux on a couple of BSDs. I haven't tried on FreeBSD, but I think the support is much better there for multimedia. I was trying on OpenBSD, and there's apps there. There's some apps there. QTractor is not on OpenBSD in the ports. And I think it has a lot to do with some of these apps where they have a lot of what they say Linuxisms, where they tend to be geared more for Linux use than to be portable. So that one's not there, but I think Rose Garden is on there. But the problem is that the Yamaha that I have, even though the system detects it, it just detects it as a generic MIDI device. Or not even a MIDI device, just detects it as a generic USB device. And it doesn't detect it as a MIDI device to create the device files for MIDI. I tried with my USB. Now this one I know won't work, but I know that they have the firmware files on FreeBSD. So I can always upload those files to the USB to MIDI adapter I have. It's a MIDIMAN USB, I forgot what it's called. It's a 2x2 USB, the MIDI sport, that's what it is. And it works on Linux, and all the firmware files are on the repos. And as far as I know, I think that FreeBSD has it, but OpenBSD does not. So that definitely won't work. But since my synth has a USB port on it, I tried plugging that in, but it doesn't detect it. So I got some information from some of the OpenBSD devs on what to do, but I just haven't sat down to try and go further with that.
Sorry to interrupt, but we need to send out Happy New Year and greetings to much of Indonesia, Thailand, and seven more, Jakarta, Bangkok, Hanoi, Phnom Penh. I'd like to remind everybody to please, please edit the Etherpad show notes for your time, for the time span.
So I have two comments, Claudio. Number one, it is totally on brand for you to try to move all this to BSD. Nobody was not expecting that to happen. And two, I'm surprised BSD has like an audio system, to be completely honest.
Oh yeah, they've had it for a while. OpenBSD uses SNDIO. And I think FreeBSD uses OSS, but you can even switch out. You can use SNDIO as well on there.
Yeah, my experience with BSD is basically FreeNAS, and that's the only experience I've ever had with it.
Hey, can you drop the link for the Etherpad again?
Just dropped it in chat.
Thanks.
Yeah, I dropped the Unfuzz YouTube channel in there on the Etherpad. All right, everyone. Well, I'm going to drop off for a bit. I'm going to go with my son to the gym, and I may jump on again later.
Good evening.
Later.
Later, Claudio. Have a good one.
Likewise. Catch you later.
Doctor Who, so much potential and so much repetition.
That's another one of the shows on my list of I need to get caught up. I'm like 3 years behind. Well, probably more than 3 years, because I'm like three seasons behind.
I stopped watching because just too many Daleks.
Yeah.
I don't know. I grew up with like old Doctor Who on PBS. So
right.
that was my jam. And then
2 a.m.
Yeah, for sure. In the middle of the night, just as a kid watching it when you weren't supposed to be watching it, but you were watching it anyways. And I didn't dislike New Who until Matt Smith. And then once that happened, I mean, I watched all of that, but it just got to be too epic, I guess is the word I would use. Like everything had to tie into everything and everything was the end of the universe, which I mean, isn't un-Doctor Who, but it just seemed like it was very convoluted and self-referential. And I watched a couple episodes of, I guess, Capaldi, and I just never finished.
That's sadly understandable.
Yeah, they're self-referential, and just as is implied, the potential and the budget that they appear to have compared to, you know, 1980 something, when it was pretty theatrical, as in the local theatre. It just seemed like the script writers, they could have, of all the scripts that people must send them.
And I feel like it, it's sort of a thing that I dislike in a lot of modern science fiction, that the scope of everything has to be so big that it just becomes meaningless. I have the same problem with Star Trek right now, that everything has to be, you know, universe ending every episode, and everything has to be a giant mystery that has to be solved. I just sort of miss, hey, this was a good story that lasted an episode, and that's fine. Like, it doesn't have to connect to anything else. It could just be a single story that's good.
Right. So concept, if the concept of the end of time is just the end, right, we understand that's the end. It would be bad. It might be bad. How much is it going to hurt? Will it hurt for the whole time? You know, but a good story with psychology that you understand, that shifts you between emotions or gives you a different concept, that would be useful.
Yeah, for sure.
Quantitative karma values, for example, or, you know, yeah, that kind of a thing. Sort of, there's, idea, real physics in science fiction. And then there's, I guess it, people don't want things to become too political, but if you have real energy values, I think I might go off on one if I ever stitch together, what do you call it, a program for HPR, an episode on, you know, fluency in understanding energy and, you know, how many man hours there are in a barrel of oil, that kind of thing.
I would so be there for that if you make that episode, because that sounds fun.
Yeah, it seems like the joule, the unit of energy, might be a good reference to have against a currency of exchange, you know, like the dollar or whatever.
I don't know. I think I would be very interested in it. I think that especially if you start to quantify it to that extent, it starts to make known probably inconvenient realities that people would have to deal with if they don't want to.
Exactly. It gets people to stop watching the program, like the Doctor Who, and go and do something, doesn't it? I don't know if that's just adulthood, like they're constantly reminded by things in media, and it should prompt a person to go and do that thing.
Well, especially when you look at, just media in general, but science fiction media tends to be the biggest culprit is, hey, we have this huge intractable problem. We're just going to sciencey-wyancey it, and then it magically just gets fixed. And I'm just using sort of coronavirus as the example. Everybody's like, well, why can't we just make a vaccine? They can make a vaccine in 45 minutes on a TV show. Why can't we do it, you know, in a week? The scale of these processes are so compressed in media that people don't understand how much work and how much time it takes to actually accomplish things.
Right. And we do have some big problems, so it would be good. And I recognize, well, there we are. Here we come to quantification of education or concept propagation, you know, amongst the population of people of varying states, in varying states of whether you call it education or, you know, here's where my stitching of audio needs attention. Like, you shouldn't talk while you're thinking, basically.
I never follow that rule.
Right, so data structures. If you could, I need like a bunch of headings. Data structure would be one. How you, and here's where like storytelling is really useful, isn't it? If you're painting, if you take 1,000 photographs and you then take the unique feature from each of those, say it's of this, a similar subject, a house or a, you know, a machine, and you take the unique feature from each of those photos and you include it in one drawn picture, one hand-drawn picture, then you have a superior data structure at the end, you know, not necessarily photographic, but conceptually better.
But wouldn't that be a quantity versus quality argument? I mean, you're losing fidelity to cram more data, and I mean, it's basically compression at that point.
I'm guessing my thought is, if you say you have a limited, so each human is trying to apply themselves to the difficult problem, whether that's climate change or starvation or, you know, disease. Disease has been the big killer for so long. Anyway, point being, if there are data structures in or ideas or habits that a person can, like their walk, their traversal in the day, that can include more things, you know, they're more like if you have a fixed amount of memory, I guess, yeah, compression is the concept. But in practical terms, it's behavioral adaptation, which can include fun or should include, you know, joyful expression.
Yeah, for sure. What's the point if it doesn't?
Yeah, the only, I've heard it described by a philosopher, the only relevant question, but I'm not going to give that the word.
My only concern when you start having conversations about data structures, because this is not something I directly work with, but I work with the outcome of a bunch of sort of big data when it comes to education, is that people get so blinded by the data that they are losing the actual stories of what is happening. Like, they're using the data to justify everything they do, and that's not always the most efficacious thing to do. The data points you in a good direction, but sometimes the data can be misleading without context. And so when you're talking about being able to, you know, have sort of, we talked about this compression idea, that would be interesting if we could sort of solidify all that data and have the context included in it. I think that would be helpful.
Yeah, I should clarify, when I say data structure, I'm using a concept, an idea, to try to express increasing how to do more with less, or how people can improve a situation according to their, I guess, the interaction between things. What do you call that? Maybe it'll come to me. That it's not the data. I'm referring to a procedure, how to incorporate necessary behaviors into a procedure with understanding. I guess that's it, that the understanding is required for a person to subtly modify their implementation to include or to improve their technique or include or produce a better outcome from the same resources or time applied.
Yeah, and specifically going back to sort of the education thing, the issue is when we make the, I won't say behavioral, I would say more, you know, structural or pedagogical changes, or, you know, because we're always trying to take data and figure out how can we do more with what we have, because clearly we're not doing good enough with what we're doing. But the problem is that the data is so overwhelming and it points in so many directions that we keep doing the same. We think the process that needs to spin out of the data is the same. And the reality has proven that that's not true, that we need to do more with that data and we need to find new patterns, but it is so convenient and so easy to just jump to the easy things. And they're the easiest to, I mean, frankly, to get funding for, that tends to be what people are doing with the data. And so the data structure, while helpful in giving us insights, the human problem of interpreting it is more of an issue than anything else.
Idea. Corollary is the reduction in interaction between humans at the moment. I mean, relating to lockdowns in the UK, where I am, my area has just gone into tier 4, which means, I mean, we already couldn't go in our friend's garden without risk of the neighbour reporting you to the police, you know, and getting up to upwards of a £10,000 fine. So you can have data and you can go to your communication device if you're one of the 2 billion lucky winners, there we are. There's my bubble, mental bubble. But my idea being, you know, how is it? Do we gain more by interacting more on a human level, or anyway, its point of application is the concept.
Yeah, for sure. And especially that one, that seems to be a big one that we haven't made a good decision on, or, you know, can't come to a consensus.
Engaging stories. I wonder, I suppose, okay, well, it has to be personal, doesn't it? I'm just wondering, like, idea. So I thought about climate change for a long time as being, so context, why am I here? I could include, well, just for for this conversation, if it is such a thing. So I got into tech. No, I'll do that in an introduction. I will include that. I guess, what's my question? I'll go and carry on with what I was doing. And if I think of some question to ask, I'll return. Happy to respond, though.
Hello. Time for Happy New Year and greetings to Myanmar and Cocos Islands, Yangon, Nappy Dal, Mandalay, and Bantam.
Starting to hit the Indian subcontinent.
Excuse me?
I guess the greetings relate to the new year sweeping the planet.
Yes, if you look at the link on the HBR site for the show notes, Etherpad, you'll see all the time breakups.
Howdy.
Hey.
Hey, old.
Hello.
Happy New Year to you.
When I enabled push to talk in the configuration, there was no audio from me. I had to switch to continuous and then use the mute, what do you call it, the button that's icon button. So I need to mute myself.
No, I use my mute key a lot, but I don't use continuous. I use voice activity.
I'll try that.
Yeah, for me, I think voice activity wouldn't work.
Can you hear this?
Yeah.
Okay, yep. Thanks. I've got server noise in the back. I'm sitting in a cupboard with a server, so I'll mute.
Hello. I need to send out greetings and Happy New Year to Bangladesh, some regions of Russia, and four more, Dhaka, Almaty, Biscay, and Thimphu. Remind everybody to post their show notes in the Etherpad document.
Happy New Year to all those places.
Do people in the lounge receive all channel chats and transmissions?
I don't know. If you want, I can go there to check.
I could do so. I just see a message from Archer to the people in the lounge. I'm not sure. John KT4KB was here before, but I think he might have missed the message. They might, I don't know if they arrived for some other, is that the lounge for this channel or a lounge for all these other titles I see?
I think it's just a default lounge where you come in. So for example, if you get booted out of the server, you might end up going back there if you reconnect.
Well, I see. It's just to see, you know, I don't understand. I'm not familiar with Mumble and this server. I see a list of other, you know, Boston Bruins, the Techie Geek, and these other sort of subdivisions on that right-hand panel. I don't need to do a thing. Or maybe it would be, yeah, so I'm not familiar. I guess someone, I don't know if we have a caretaker.
It might be K-Wisher. K-Wisher, are you admin on the server?
I'll just go there and ask. Maybe no one is talking.
Hear me?
Yes.
Who's that? Who's that?
I think Tony H was speaking.
No, that's me. Who's you?
My name's Dan, one of Spoons.
Hi, Dan.
One of Spoons. If you look on, can you see a right-hand panel with a blue icon showing person talking?
Oh, yeah, I've got it now. I've got you. I couldn't see it for a minute.
And it's time to welcome Russia into the new year.
Getting a lot of echo. So what's happening your end? You're very low, Tojet.
Is that better? Can you hear me clearer now?
Oh, yeah. Well, there's a bit of crackle, but you're a lot louder and easier to hear. I'm just going to go and see if any of the Mintcast crew want to join us.
Cool. You had to love a movie that was about all these cell phones flying out of people's hands and attacking.
So what's this Just Watch?
It was called 2.0. I put the link in the chat.
Yeah, no, I've just gone to the page. So is this a movie streaming site, or does it just give you the details of the shows?
It was a link I'd found a while back. It allows you to find on Roku different channels that are playing a movie. Oh, and right. I happened to see that one pop up in there, and it looked so bad I had to watch it.
Is this a Bollywood movie?
Oh, yeah. Just watch the preview from it.
I watched the trailer, yeah. Let's have a look.
Yo, I'm back.
Welcome back, O9L.
I guess O9L is sticking.
I'm trying to make it stick. I guess I have some Russians around. I just heard fireworks outside.
Ah. Oh, they've been setting off fireworks here for the last hour, and there's still another nearly 5 hours before it's New Year.
Ah, it's Russians for sure. They're not too drunk to know when the New Year's Eve actually is, so they just make a large window of fireworks.
So for all of you over in the UK, are you doing a countdown to Brexit now?
No. We're doing a countdown to New Year. It's New Year in 4 hours 50. It's 19:10 UK time at the moment.
Yeah, I'm trying to plan when. I've got both the Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit, the extended versions.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm planning on doing like a weekend where I lock myself in and watch them all through.
Yeah, if you've got both, watch the Hobbit first, and then Lord of the Rings.
Well, I had the set before, and I loaned them out to a person, and they sort of disappeared. So for Christmas, my family decided to give me a replacement with the extended version.
Yeah, yeah, I've got the extended Lord of the Rings. I'm not sure about the extended Hobbit.
Yeah, in The Lord of the Rings, they cut the books down heavily to fit them into the movies, and then in The Hobbit, they extended the book so much to make it into more movies.
Yeah, they added loads of stuff. what's his name? The elf character. He doesn't appear in the book at all.
You mean they took an artistic license with the movie?
Oh, just a tad. Just a tad.
I find The Hobbit movies unsufferable.
insufferable, something like that.
You just got to separate them from the book.
Yeah, because I really like the book. It's one of those times when I actually read the book before watching the movie.
I actually remember I was about 9 or 10, and we've got a program in this country called Book at Bedtime, and they serialized The Hobbit on Book at Bedtime, and I remember listening to it.
As an audiobook.
Cool.
Yeah, the only one I've caught is the Harry Potter books, and I have not seen the movies.
Read the books before the movies. The movies are horrible if you don't have the background from the books.
Yeah. Yeah. I read The Hobbit when I was about 17. Not The Hobbit, The Lord of the Rings when I was about 17.
I read the first and half of the second, and then I couldn't finish. It just got too boring at some point.
I have both the books lying around my house somewhere, so I really should read them.
Well, if you just watch the movies, Harry Potter seems like a spoiled brat that just happens to get into a lot of trouble.
Isn't he, though?
The books do a much better job of showing the problems he went through. Now, what I'd love to see them do is to go back and write a series of books of the foundations of Hogwarts.
Yeah, that would be cool.
I figured they could do at least a series of 4 books, one from each of the founders' point of view and all leading up into it.
Yeah, and J.K. Rowling does have a good history of giving us details after the fact.
And that never caused any trouble.
No, not at all.
Well, I've not had any takers from my Mintcast crew to come and join us. Ken's just turned up.
Hello.
Hello, Ken.
Welcome, Ken.
Hey, yeah.
Welcome back, Mr. Fallon.
How are you all doing now?
Yeah, not too bad.
Having some coffee before hanging out.
I just decided to join on before I fell asleep, and I just started to fall asleep on the sofa.
Yeah, same here. My wife was in bed, so I can't.
It's only 2:15 here.
Tony, didn't you have voice activation?
I've got voice activation, yeah, but I've got my headphones on, so I'm not the echo.
No, but you might start snoring at some point.
I'll use my mute key.
It might be entertaining, just saying.
I can do that when I'm not asleep. I was trying to recruit a new host this afternoon, Ken.
Excellent. Well done, you.
Yeah. Can't remember if he's still here. But it was someone who was here who hasn't actually submitted the show yet and didn't know how to go about it. So I just talked to him about just tell his tech story.
I think that's me, actually.
Was it you, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah. See, now you've got the man himself who can tell you you owe him a show now, you see.
I know.
Only if he promises to do it.
Well, Ken, I still feel guilty. I promised you a show a couple of years ago, and I still haven't recorded it.
I know. Don't worry about it. Naughty Tom.
I did get one in recently, but I still haven't given him the one I promised.
That matters not a jot. It took me 10 years to do the satellite episode.
Yeah. I suppose with the new year coming up, I'll have to get me at least one show in the next few weeks.
Yeah, 260 new slots available for anybody.
As you keep reminding us.
Ahuka sent in a load. He must have been piling them up.
Let's go and have a look at the queue.
I could always threaten to sing and record it as a show.
So long as it's Creative Commons, I'm fine with that.
I saw that page on What's Good. It's some very clever...
All right, should put that link into the notes.
See, 14 days to the next gap currently available. Well, it says 13, but it's the I suppose it is 13.
Yep, that's no harm. Always looking for shows. Something we've never managed to fix: getting enough holes.
Well, you must admit. The New Year show does generate shows because it was me talking about the cars that generated the car series that I did, model series.
And it was the New Year show that got a hookah on, and we got a lot of shows from him, to be told.
Although I missed all my interview opportunities last year because everything got cancelled.
Yeah.
Wait, you're saying that if I join the show, I might get tricked into doing another episode?
Yeah. Tricked is such a rude word.
Yeah, I don't think we trick anyone. We just tell you I was a show.
Well, only if you say you're going to do one.
You could keep track of all the shows people owe you and then every month remind them.
No, the list is too long. And then I'd be getting too much spam myself.
Just have a giant Excel spreadsheet.
I'm the worst. Well, I'm not the worst. The worst is probably Dave Morris, because I keep getting him to. He has a database now of shows that he convinced him to do. I'm just a GitHub repository where I or a Git repository where I keep a list of shows that I'm working on.
Yeah,
I just have a directory.
I still, wish for that day when everyone who listens puts a show in, and then you'd have shows backed up for like 10 years.
Yeah, good luck with that. I have 97 shows in the in work in progress at the moment.
97? Wow.
Yep.
I have a brain idea for 2.
Now, if he says, if you mention them, then you owe me a show.
Yeah, I'm not going to do that. Too scared.
I still wish for the day when I have an idea for a show and I just do it and submit it.
Yeah, and just switch Audacity on, start talking, and submit it.
Yeah.
How do you think that last one I did got posted?
Which is basically what happens to this lot.
I always find some convoluted way of recording it, though. Audacity would be too simple.
Audacity is one of the softwares that's like really steep learning curve, but I guess once you get it, it's not that bad.
Not so bad. We've got a few shows on how to use Audacity, just the bare minimum. But you don't even need to do that. You just go press record on your Android phone or whatever phone.
Yeah.
And then go share email to admin@republicreview.org.
Can you still submit a show over the phone?
Prefer not to. Prefer to go. Yeah, you can just go to the upload page and just fill it out from there.
Oh, you mean you don't live stream it, then download it with YouTube download and strip it over into an MP3 with a FFmpeg?
You could do that, yeah, and you could do a show about doing that.
Be a short show.
But there was a dial-in option at one time, wasn't there, Ken?
Yeah, and Mr. Gadget used to use it quite a lot, but then that was it. I think the person who was paying for our... the service stopped that was providing it.
All right, everyone.
But it's like never been easier to record a show now with on your mobile phone. Most people have a mobile phone, and
yeah,
just press record and then go to the website and upload that file.
Happy New Year, everyone!
Happy New Year!
I'm going to drop off until midnight. I think I'll pop back in. I've got a bit of a headache.
I don't think I'll survive that long. So, Happy New Year, Ken.
I'll be around tomorrow anyway, so I suspect this is going to be a long one. So, I'll catch up with you tomorrow. How's about that?
All right, I'll catch up with you tomorrow.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye.
Happy New Year, Tony.
Happy New Year.
I thought people were talking over me, but I forgot I switched my mic input.
So, where are you based, Archer?
I'm about north of Chicago, about an hour.
Oh, right, okay. Oh, I ended up coming off the freeway there and ended up downtown Chicago when I was traveling between Minneapolis and Akron. Found myself in a not too salubrious district. Luckily, I managed to get back on the freeway.
No, I stay away from there, especially it's a high population area with the COVID.
Yeah. We're on a stay-at-home order at the moment. Went into it today.
I think they suggest we stay at home, but I'm not quite sure lately. I haven't looked at the website for it.
Mm. Are you on the lake?
About an hour and a half north of where the lake is.
Oh, right. Okay. Have you got snow at the moment?
Oh, we got a bit of snow, and it was nice and crystallized after it ended up... stopping.
All right, it froze, did it?
Yeah.
Yeah, we've had a smattering of hail over last night that froze up. That wasn't very pleasant this morning on the road until it melted off.
No, the dog hates it too. She's a tiny one, so she has a trouble with the icy snow.
Oh, yeah. Oh, is that you, Joe, in there?
Is Joe in there?
I've just noticed there's someone called Joe. I'm just wondering if it's Mint Cash Joe.
I believe so.
Yeah, I shall go and give him a nudge.
I was trying to get his attention because he got me kind of turned on to, what is it, X2Go. Have you heard about that program?
I've heard of X2Go. I've not used it.
He keeps mentioning it on the Lugcast.
Yeah. He's mentioned it a few times in Mintcast as well.
Right.
Oh, fireworks going off again.
Fireworks are illegal around here, so you don't hear too many of them, actually. Surprisingly.
Best fireworks display I saw was over at a house, and while we were setting off the fireworks, a police officer came up, sat there watching the whole thing, and when we were done, he comes up, he goes, "Are you out of fireworks?" We go, "Yeah." He goes, "Well, good, because I was going to have to ask you to stop, because they're not legal." Uh-oh, just saw a dangerous flyer. Krispy Kreme's got a special going on their donuts for the next 2 days.
Oh, no. Can't be doing with that.
I have something, like, it's like a something sweet. I don't even know what to call it. It's called babka, I think, is how you pronounce it. It's really interesting. Kind of reminds me of a donut.
One's too many and a thousand's not enough, so I stay clear.
Krispy Kreme, hot glazed, right off the press. It's just sugar and air. You can inhale them.
Yeah. Would play hell with my blood sugar.
I won't tell your doctor. Of course, that would mean I'd have to spend extra time at the gym, right?
Of course. I can't do that at the moment because they're all shut.
Oh, the one near here, you can call and make an appointment with them. They only allow a certain amount of people in at a time, and so you got to like book it a couple of days in advance.
Yeah, that was the case with us until midnight when we went into the stay-at-home order and all the gyms had to close.
I think all the lockdowns are doing is just slowing how fast it spreads. It doesn't actually stop it, and it doesn't really stop people from getting it. It just slows it down.
Yeah, which is what we need at the moment. We need it to slow down because all our hospitals are getting full.
Yeah.
Now, for the vaccines in the UK, is that a conditional approval like here in the US, or is that a full approval that they did?
For the Oxford one, it's a full approval. So we've got the AstraZeneca one, which was approved a few weeks ago, and now we've got the Oxford one.
I thought the AstraZeneca and Oxford were the same one. Pfizer that was approved.
It was the Pfizer one. Sorry, I got mixed up.
Yeah. Now, the AstraZeneca one, the AstraZeneca Oxford is a traditional vaccine. I'm not sure about that Pfizer one.
Yeah.
I'm a bit concerned about that mRNA. This is the first time they're using it in a human.
Oh, I thought the Oxford one was talking about it on the news tonight. And they were saying it's based on some primate virus.
Yeah, it's basically modified off of, from what I understand, that some variation of a monkey virus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's a traditional inoculation for it. The Pfizer one that they're doing, both the Pfizer and the Moderna, they're using what they call mRNA. Basically, it's trying to tell your body to go ahead and put it into gear to defend, but it's something that hasn't been done before.
Right.
A little bit worried about the long-term effects.
Yeah, this new Chinese one is a dead virus.
Yeah, it's definitely made the holidays challenging. This is the first time in as long as I can remember that we haven't got to see my wife's family for Christmas.
Same here. Yeah, we normally go up to Scotland to see my wife's family either round Christmas or round Hogmanay.
Now, with Brexit taking effect, when you do go back up to Scotland, are you going to have passports for that? Or
no, Scotland's still part of the UK.
I thought there was something, or was it Ireland? There was something different with the trade zone because part was going and part wasn't going, I thought.
Northern Ireland. as far as customs union, they're staying in the customs union. So any trade between Northern Ireland and mainland UK has to have the same paperwork as if it was going to direct to your coming direct from Europe, and vice versa. So if we're sending stuff from mainland UK to Northern Ireland, it has to have the same customs paperwork as it would have to go the other way across to France and the rest of Europe, because they're maintaining the single customs union, and that's to maintain the open border between Southern and Northern Ireland, which is all part of the peace treaty that they came up with to end the violence.
Yeah, at some point when normal travel gets resumed, I want to see about taking my wife over to England there for a tour of castles and historic sites.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah.
So far, her only trip in her life outside of the country was a trip to Canada.
Yeah, it's amazing how many people in the States have never left the States. But there again, you've got 50 countries in your one country, haven't you? So you've got plenty of places to explore.
I grew up as a military brat and spent time over in Europe for a while.
Yeah.
Lived in Italy. That was a blast.
Thing is, a lot of our countries are boring as hell. All I've looked at Wisconsin, or not Wisconsin, North Dakota, South Dakota, those areas, Midwest. Mm-hmm. Those are not very interesting countries.
Yeah, I've had to be out there for a few business trips. Well, what's weird was driving through the there and seeing all the windmills.
Yeah, they do a lot of that, don't they?
Yeah, flying over that area, looking down, you'll see this giant area of farmland with, and then like a clump of trees with a house in the middle of it where the guy lives.
It's kind of crazy to see people who, you know, live on farms, because I've never been really around that. I could never imagine doing that.
That's the thing about the States, though. You've got such vast areas of open land and wilderness and stuff. It's amazing.
Yeah, where I'm at in North Carolina, I've got a short drive one direction. I can get down to the beach and go out in the water and all and have fun. And then a few hours the other direction, you're up in the mountains and snow and having a blast up there.
Looks like Greenland's only had 27 COVID cases. Lucky bastards.
From what I understand, even Antarctica's had COVID cases now. There's no place that's untouched.
Antarctica isn't on the map I'm looking at here, because it's like a map made to look... Oh, yeah, no, it's not. Made to look for COVID stuff. No one really thought, hey, we should probably put Antarctica on the map that needs to show us cases of a disease. Because, well, no one gets diseases in Antarctica, but... I guess they're wrong. Maybe a cold.
Anywhere in the world can get diseases.
Unless you're in Washington, D.C., all the hot air kills everything.
We miss saying Happy New Year to Kabul.
Yeah, I had that one open. I missed it, too.
Coming up, Dubai next.
Just China? Like, Dubai?
Wait, no, Dubai. It's in the Middle Dubai's, East. It's one of the Arab countries.
I was thinking Shanghai.
Isn't Dubai the got a development out there that looks like a palm leaf in the middle of the water?
Yeah, they created a big development. They reclaimed some of the sea. Yeah. That'll be great until we get rising sea levels.
Well, if the water rises enough, then the Raleigh area that I'm at will become oceanfront property.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same for me. I'm only a mile from the beach.
I got a good 20 feet on the sea level. I'm good for a while.
I'll probably be dead before then.
If your house gets swallowed by the ocean, you can come live here.
Pardon?
If your house gets swallowed by the ocean, you can come live here.
It's okay. When Yellowstone goes, it's going to make all this a moot point.
What was that movie with... can't remember his name now. The one they did where they were all living on the sea. Waterworld.
That was horrible.
Yeah, it's a horrible movie, but you know, it's starting to look like it could happen now.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. We got a few hundred years until the sea was enough to swallow some actual countries.
Yeah.
Well, some island nations, even less than that, I think.
Oh, yeah. Some of the Maldives and places like that, that are very low-lying islands, they'll go very quickly.
Yeah. Are there any crazy headlines I've missed?
I didn't quite catch that.
Are there any crazy headlines I've missed since I left this morning?
Crazy headlines?
Yeah, like...
Sorry, go on.
Oh, I was just going to say, yeah, like the news, and just in case you missed it.
No, I'm not... most of our news has been about Brexit and COVID, so I haven't heard much else.
Yeah.
I haven't heard what your glorious leader's been up to today.
I don't even want to know.
I think the more major one in our news right now is the Nashville bombing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was horrible.
From the sounds of it, the guy, when he set off the van, didn't really want people to get hurt, so he had that countdown warning.
Oh, so he actually placed a warning.
Yeah, a few minutes before it went off, he had a speaker telling people to get out of the area, that there's going to be an explosion, and, you know, basically did a countdown for that. And then he started playing some song called Downtown right as it was detonating.
That's interesting.
And then it came out in the news yesterday that apparently the police had been in his house in 2019, last year, because his girlfriend had turned him in for bomb making in the RV. They came to talk to him, he refused to talk to them, and they just left.
What?
Just some casual bomb making, nothing crazy, you know. Let's just ignore this dude. I'm sure he's fine.
Yeah, apparently Google Earth has a picture of his house with the RV in his yard.
Oh my gosh.
Jeez. Did they ever say how many people got hurt and if anyone got killed from that? I never got a good number.
Well, I know he died in the explosion. They've confirmed that from the DNA. I thought a few people got injured, but I don't know if any of them got killed.
Yeah, I heard people have got injured, but I haven't heard of any fatalities.
That's good.
Yeah, from the sounds of it, they haven't found official motives or anything, but it sounded like this may have been his retirement plan.
I guess it's quite the literal sense of going out with a bang.
Yeah, one of his neighbors said they had talked to him just a couple of days before Christmas. They had stopped by and saw him by the mailbox and asked him how his Christmas was going. The guy says, the world won't forget me for what's going to happen.
Wow.
Jeez. That man really was not very secretive about what he was doing, was he?
Best way to get away with something is do it in plain sight and act like you're supposed to be doing it.
Yeah, that's one thing.
Yeah. Sounds like a pen testing talk, you know, TV in a walk or something like that. Something he would say. Just walk into the building with a clipboard or whatever. I always find this so interesting. Because physical penetration testing is... I mean, I don't know much about it, obviously. But just, like, looking at some talks on it, like DEFCON or whatever, that's just an amazing, like, job to have.
Yeah, I've got a friend in the UK, that's what he does for a living.
I think one of the neatest pen testing ones I saw was the guy who was hired by a bank to test the security there. He had broken completely into the servers on the first day in less than an hour. All he did was posted a bunch of USB drives with Trojans on it in the parking lot. And they had a VP pick up one of these drives, walk in, and plug it into his computer.
What?
Wow. I heard one where the guy broke into the wrong bank. That was a podcast episode. Not on the show.
Back in 2001, right before the first dot-com bubble burst, there was a company that thought they had done the ultimate online security. So they posted information about their system and challenged people to break in. They said the first person who can get this file off of the root of the hard drive, they had it was like a Lamborghini or something that they were going to give to them. Got busted the first day by two guys who took a pickup truck, drove it into the building, ripped the drive out, copied the file off, and gave it to them. And they couldn't even be prosecuted because they were invited to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably the best I've heard so far. It's not even pen testing, that's just, like, smart thinking.
Yeah, I had a data center I was in charge of for a while. Sitting in my office on the fourth floor, had to get through two levels of security to get up to where I was. And I turn around and there's a police officer standing there. And he goes, we're looking for so-and-so. And it's like, how did you get up here? People just let him through without, he came in a uniform. They let him through, assuming he was had a legal reason to be there, and just bypassed all our security.
Jesus. Yeah, if someone walked in with just a clipboard in their hands, I probably wouldn't question their authority too much, but knowing what I know, I wouldn't just let them pass. That's always the thing that makes you look authoritative, is having a clipboard. The high-vis jest, the vest.
Many years ago in my high school days, a friend and I were bored one afternoon. We had worked at a local grocery store in Virginia Beach, and decided to test to see how people respond to different situations. So we took our little smock, our little uniform from work, went into another branch of the grocery store, and just started working there. Didn't clock in, didn't talk to anybody. After about a half hour, one of the managers came up to me and said, "Do you work here?" And I said, "No." And they said, "Okay," and they went back on. The manager, who's supposed to be tracking these things, didn't care.
Jeez.
Oh, here's a good one for you. I just saw a headline from one of the news services that says, "Don't shoot guns at midnight to celebrate New Year's," police warn, and offer $500 for tips leading to arrest.
People are dumb.
Yeah, I got a neighbor that has a gun range. I live out in the county. I got a neighbor that's got a gun range, and so I'm expecting in a little while they're going to be out there shooting off like crazy.
If you own a gun range, I guess that's different. But I mean, midnight's still pretty bad.
The only side effect of having a gun range nearby is gunfire doesn't faze me.
Yeah, Happy New Year's to Dubai. It was about 15 seconds ago.
So you're saying Dubai said goodbye to 2020?
Absolutely.
Looks like a Gascar, Horn of Africa, most of Georgia, and a good part of Russia.
I could put that movie on.
What movie?
Penguins of Madagascar.
Ah, that would be good to watch when Madagascar turns 10 years.
I was a time zone off, guys. Sorry about that. It's not Madagascar there.
Oh, well, I guess I can't watch it.
What are you doing, Madagascar?
Now, one of the other set of movies I got for Christmas was the original Battlestar Galactica series.
Ooh. That sounds good.
Nice.
I've got that here as well.
I also keep meaning to get back into it, but I'm in Heroes right now.
Yeah, unfortunately, a lot of the stuff that they're releasing now, they've edited and modified it. Trying to find a copy of the original E.T., not the one that they distribute now.
It's like trying to find an original copy of Blade Runner, because there's been so many different director's cuts, it's impossible.
Yeah, well, the original E.T., when it came out, they had the astronauts coming into the house with guns. And when they re-released it now, they modified it, and they've edited it to walkie-talkies instead of guns.
That's an interesting edit.
Make it more kid-friendly.
But that was part of what was some of the contrast at the time, is here come these astronauts in with carrying guns. Loses something with the whitewashing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be like taking out the clip of Alex Guinness trying to save the bridge in Bridge Over the River Kwai when the commandos come to blow it up.
Well, someone raises an interesting question. Do we have to be kid-friendly, like with language, or what's that? That was totally related to not this, but I'm just asking now because I didn't ask in the podcast or the show. I mean, not E.T.
Sorry, I missed what you were asking.
For this new Year's show here, do we have to be like kid friendly with language or what?
We try to be, because it does go out as a show, but I think it usually gets a non-family friendly thing on the when it goes out as an HPR show, just in case.
Okay, I'll make sure to be wholesome then for the kids.
Although, considering some of the topics we talk about, it's not very family friendly, young person friendly anyway.
Yeah, I don't really know how many people are young enough for that to be an issue watch this show, but just in case.
Now, when they edit this for putting it in there, are they manually deleting all the blank spaces, or do they use some sort of script that automatically...
Use Audacity. Audacity takes it out automatically.
Oh, I haven't tried that in Audacity yet.
Yeah, it's called Truncate Silence.
Ah, okay.
We do all the time when we're editing the podcast for Mintcast, and I do the editing for Distro Hoppers, and I do that as well.
Do they release this, like, New Year's show is just one thing, or they split it up at all?
No, the New Year's show gets split up into about five or six. It depends how much audio comes out of it. So it depends how many how much of long silences there are during the 26 hours plus. But last year, I think it made 6 or 7 episodes.
It'd be interesting if they split up like different topics into segments, but I think that'd be way too much work for anyone who was doing that.
Am I hearing a volunteer?
Oh no.
They don't edit it per se. I think mainly it's just chopping it up at a logical point and truncating the silence mainly, and maybe adjusting the levels a little bit, but they don't do an awful lot of editing on it.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's probably going to be like 2 days, or maybe even like 3 days of audio before silence is removed.
Yeah, I was curious to see what sort of automated processing they were doing, because for the church I've been working with, I've been taking their live stream and cutting out the music and just posting the sermon as a podcast feed. And currently I'm doing all that manually, and I was trying to see if there was some way to automate that.
Well, Audacity is a powerful piece of kit.
Well, that's what I do, is I pull it up in Audacity and I look for, you can see the differences in the waveforms between it, and then I just listen to it, find that spot where it switches from music to sermon, and then break there and delete the beginning, delete the end, and save the whole thing out that way.
Yeah, you can put labels on and then just split it at the labels.
I might have to play around and see what more I can do with Audacity. Been using it for a while and just haven't really done much more than basic cut and paste.
Yeah, when I'm editing the audio for Distro Hoppers, as I'm going through it, I label it so that I know where to put the transition music in when I come to actually producing the final edit. Makes things a lot easier.
Yeah, for a while there, for doing the podcast feed for the church, what I was doing was I had using a Audacity to actually do the recording on a machine on site, and then I had a bash script that was taking and uploading it to the file server. Had a script running on the file server that detected a new file and automatically updated and posted the podcast feed.
Wow.
It was working good, and then I had tags and all in there, and then Apple started adding more tag requirements and all, and I made a few changes to support it, and then about a year ago, they made a change to some of the requirements on iTunes so it wouldn't take the feed anymore. So I ended up looking around and found Anchor FM for doing the podcast hosting for free, so all you have to do is upload the file there.
Yeah, there are a few free hosting. We use same as HPR, we use archive.org to host the audio for Mintcast and Distro Hoppers.
Yeah, I like Archive.
So I've got a little regular monthly contribution I give them just to help out with the hosting costs. Still cheaper than it would be if I was using a hosting service.
Yeah, I had a script that I was running using Google Drive and some automation tools or app tools under Google. You could actually have it build a podcast feed directly in Google Drive with the links, but Apple did not like the feed from that at all. The biggest problem is, even though you could do the link that worked for all the files, the Google Drive doesn't do some sort of reverse lookup or dynamic lookup that Apple wants in order to take the files from there.
Right.
So I'm looking at trying a device repair that I haven't tried before on my daughter's phone. Her screen is completely cracked, but it looks like it's actually intact underneath. I looked at what it was going to cost to replace the phone. It was like to replace the screen. It's $275 to get the screen repaired from any the professional places to do it. Found a kit where if you're not having to replace the screen, just glass, and it looks like it's just the glass on this, you might be able to do it for $30. So I might have to see if I can do that and put together notes for an episode out of it if I succeed.
Go for it.
It was like I said, about $270 to replace the screen on it, or I could, instead of doing that, I got her Pixel 4A, not that much more.
Go.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out what phone I want next. Honestly, I don't know. I definitely want an Android phone. I'm over Apple entirely, but I just don't know what.
Well, the phone I'm currently using right now is the original Pixel XL. And the reason I got that one is I was able to reload it with Lineage, and I love Lineage on it. Being able to de-Googlify it seems to have made the battery work pretty decent on it.
Yeah, I was running Lineage on my OnePlus One at one stage after they stopped supporting it.
Well, the phone she has with the broken screen is a Samsung 9, and I was looking, that is supported on Lineage. It's an official support on Lineage, so... Samsung S9. So I'm thinking if I can get the screen replaced on it, I'm going to use that as my replacement phone. And if not, the phone's already a write-off anyway.
Yeah, right.
I've always been pretty hesitant about putting Lineage.
That was interesting sounding right there. It sounded like you had a fan blowing on your microphone.
Either that or he was on a railroad car heading down a tunnel about to crash.
Escalators.
Yeah, for my, after switching my phone over to Lineage, I'm running Nextcloud at the house, and I've got the phone configured up so everything syncs straight to there, and nothing's syncing to any of the Google servers now.
For doing the screen replacement, Taj may be able to give you some tips.
My phone's got a cracked screen. At some stage in the next 12 months, I'm going to replace it.
New Year's resolution, fix your phone.
It's not worth it for what it cost me. And it works perfectly well with the cracks. The cracked screen's not that bad that it doesn't make it unusable.
Yeah, I don't think I would bother with mine either. It's a little bit messed up, but I can still use my phone.
Well, this phone I got from Josh, who used to be a host on Mintcast, young Josh, when I dropped my other one and really smashed up the screen on that. And that wasn't usable because it had sharp shards on the surface. And then about 6 months after he sold me this one, which is a second-hand Huey Pro 20, I dropped it and the screen cracked again.
Oh god.
And I've got it in a case. It just, the case fell open and it fell on the glass.
Is that a Huawei, you said?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, my wife loves those.
Yeah, it's a nice phone.
I'm not sure about it being from China though.
Well, they're all from China.
Yeah, you got that right.
That's right. Even Apple's made in China.
I know the iPads are made in China, and they have all that aluminum dust that is killing the workers.
Mm. Yeah, they're all either made in China or somewhere around that region.
What was that open source phone? Not the Pine phone. There's another one been seen recently.
Was it the Fairphone?
Not the Fairphone. It's another one. It was an open source one, but one of the things is they had two versions. They had like a $600 version and a $1,600 version. The $1,600 version. Dollar version was made in the U.S. See if I can find that.
I'm trying to think.
See what the duck says. Librem phone?
Yeah, it probably is the Librem.
Yeah, I think that's it.
That's the one where you have hardware switches for your mic, I believe so.
Yeah, it's a bit overpriced for the hardware, though.
Yeah, they had two, the Librem 5 and the Librem 5 USA.
What's the operating system that only works on Pixels? It's like really secure or whatever? Graphene OS, I think.
I was wrong on the price. It's almost $2,000 for the US version.
Ooh. Wow.
Yeah, I think I'll take my tinfoil hat off for that.
Well, the thing is, you can only cut down so much on tracking because your cell phone still has to check in with towers with some sort of unique identifier.
Yeah. The only way to stop tracking is have a load of burn phones and switch them on once, make one call, and then throw them away and use the next one next time. It's a bit expensive, that.
What, you can't afford to buy a new phone every day?
Don't think so.
Set up, some sort of cheap phone on autobuy. It's $200 a day. Not that bad, right?
Yeah. As my dad used to say, I'm a poor pensioner.
All right, if I did it right, I added the link to the Librem 5 USA in the show notes.
Yeah, I wanted to look at this one thing about the Graphene OS. I wonder if that's, like, I've heard about it. I don't know if it's any good, if anyone knows anything about it. Graphene OS for the Pixel Fence.
Yeah, Graphene OS is a new one that's coming out, and they're deliberately trying to remove any reference to Google at all in there. Lineage has just removed the Google apps, and it's tried to do workarounds for some of them.
It seems pretty interesting because, you know, I think it's a pretty good idea to not have any Google on your phone.
Yeah, well, like I said, I've took mine, I redid it to Lineage, and then I've got it where it does all its syncing against Nextcloud, and that seems to work great.
Yeah, my co-host on Mintcast, Moss East, tried to de-Google his life, but it's not easy.
I've done pretty well at it. The only thing I have to use is Google Translate, really.
Yeah, I've been trying to use Start Page for my search engine. I know it's using Google on the back end, and I've been trying to use everything else for mapping and other things. Matter of fact, the latest version of Nextcloud, they've got a really nice integration on the mapping in there.
I've been using Cirques. It's pretty interesting. It works with, like, it aggregates a few different search engine results, indexes, sorry. So it has, like, DuckDuckGo and Google.
Yeah, I'd love to find a good open source distributed search engine to replace Google. Sort of like you've got the Tor network, but except for you could have different people add their machine in to share for searching and indexing. I've seen a few projects out there, but nothing that's of really a usable level yet.
Yeah.
I guess the real problem is trying to do something like that distributed. The Google data centers has all the stuff with very short access time between the servers. And if you're in a distributed network, it's going to take a while to coordinate everything.
Hard to compete with Google. They have so much just power.
It's amazing how far these big tech companies have come in the last 15 years or so.
I've been trying to remove most of the Google portions of my life ever since. It seems like every time I got a service I really start liking with them, they discontinue it.
Yeah.
How many of you remember Google Reader?
I've heard about it. I never used to use it, but knew about it.
Yeah, I'm actually now, instead of Google Reader, I've got a self-hosted TTRSS one that seems to work pretty good.
I just use, it's still Google, but I use Feedburner. And that's for pushing RSS, not reading it, for taking them.
Now, one of the features I like on Nextcloud now, with, like I said, they've improved the mapping in there, it's being able to pull up all my contacts on a map and have it see where they're all mapped out that way.
Yeah.
And then with the photos being automatically uploaded, you can actually have the maps in Nextcloud mapping out where you did your photos, similar to what you do with some of the Google services.
I take pictures on my phone without, like, the location data embedded, so.
Well, I don't mind having the location embedded if it's going to my servers. If it's going to somebody else's server, I try to strip it out before I send it.
Yeah, I just skip that and just don't take any photos with that because it's just a lot of effort to do that if I'm sending it to someone else.
Yeah. Well, with the Nextcloud client, because I kept running out of space on the phone from different videos and pictures going on there. So with the Nextcloud client, you can have it where as soon as you take stuff, it'll automatically upload it to your server and then take it off your device. And that keeps me from running out of space from things.
I don't have a Nextcloud set up at all.
It's worth the effort.
I need something more than what I have because I don't really have anywhere to do it. All I have is just a little NAS for that kind of thing.
For a while, my Nextcloud server was a Lenovo T410 sitting behind the TV in my living room.
I do have an old Mac Mini laying around that could use.
Doesn't take much. As long as you can learn load Linux on it, you should be able to run it.
Yeah, I'll have to look into that.
Would make a good episode, too.
Yeah, that's true. I'm not going to promise that one.
Yeah, I've been meaning to document it the last several times I built one, and I keep forgetting to write it up. So.
If I do it, I'll document it. And if I don't do it, I won't document it. Hey, you write that down somewhere. Ironically, the Notes app I use syncs to Nextcloud, but I just don't have that set up, obviously.
Yeah, I've got notes and several other things syncing in there. And what's great is, first thing I do when I set up a machine for me is I put in the Nextcloud client and start syncing the stuff down. And I've not lost any documents since I started that about 10 years ago. I started out when it was still OwnCloud. Of course, OwnCloud still exists, but all the development's going on the NextCloud side.
Yeah, I don't know much about self-hosting software at all, but I'm definitely interested in it because it seems like a really cool idea.
For the one I'm running right now, I've got... My son had upgraded his gaming machine at the house, so he had his old machine sitting there and was trying to decide what to do with it, so I snagged it. So I've got that loaded as my server. I'm using NoIP for doing Dyn DNS lookups on the server, and I've got an account with them. Got a domain registered there, and so once I set it up, I pretty much forget about the machine.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Got a few cron jobs that'll automatically do the updates to it and reboot the machine. I've got some cron jobs now that'll automatically do the NextCloud app updates, so I know that every week they're getting their latest things on there. And then once you set it up, like I said, I use it more than I maintain it anymore.
That's good to hear. That makes it sound not as daunting.
Now, one of the features they have on it that I haven't really investigated is they apparently now have something for ransomware protection. It'll detect that you've done a lot of your files are being encrypted and basically stop from storing those changes in there. But I've never really worked with it, so I don't know too much about it.
Huh. That's pretty interesting. I've never heard of something like that before.
They also have some social networking integration in there for some of your open social networks. Again, I haven't messed with that portion of it yet either.
Yeah.
Did we miss Happy New Year for Tehran, Rashad, Esfan, Rashad?
We did.
My fault. I was babbling on. Got you distracted.
Yeah. Next one's Moscow.
Right. I found that timeanddate.com has an easier way to gauge it against my central time.
Yes. Oh, I'm using the one Ken posted earlier on. I'll put the link in the mumble.
I think it's already in the show notes.
Yes,
it is in the show notes.
Yeah.
I just get confused by those Zulu times.
Is that what the Z stands for?
Yeah. Zulu's basically UCT and Greenwich Mean Time.
Yeah, I figured it was this.
Yeah, from what I understand, the Greenwich Observatory's atomic clock got shut down a few years ago. Wasn't that... Or was I mistaken?
I couldn't tell you. I'm not a proponent of that kind of knowledge. They tend to refer to UTC now. Or UCT, or what we call it.
We can blame all the time zones on the railroads.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard that story.
Yeah, so that they could have reliable timetables.
Now, if we could only get rid of the daylight savings changes.
Yeah, daylight savings is probably the most annoying things they have to deal with all the time.
Yeah, what's interesting is between the northern and southern hemisphere, there's some... I was working with some countries in South America for a while, and depending on daylight savings times and the differences in adjustments between us, we could either be the same time or 2 hours different.
Hmm. Yeah, time sucks.
Hey, did anybody see that the news article about Elon Musk wanting to catch the big rocket on the launch tower when it lands instead of having it landing gear on it?
Nope, didn't see that.
So apparently the plan is he's trying to keep their big heavy lifter rocket. He's trying to keep from having landing gear on it. So they've got a portion that holds it during launch, and the intention is to fly it back down to the launch pad and have it catch back on those same things so they don't have to have landing gear on it and be able to launch again in just a matter of hours.
Wow.
See if I can find that real quick.
That's... wow.
Found it, just posted it in there, and I'll add it to the notes. Of course, I guess the problem is if they mess up, not only do they lose the rocket, they lose the launch pad.
Yeah. Right, I'm going to go. I find it painful to wear headphones after a while, so it'll probably be tomorrow morning before I rejoin and say hi before everyone goes.
See you later.
Dude. All right. Cheers. Have a good
Have
one.
Fun,
man.
See you
yeah.
later.
Bye.
I just found a great little interesting thing. It's like a command line weather little thing. You can curl the website and it brings out the weather on your terminal.
What's the link?
Yeah, I'm copying it here. I'll post it in the Mumble. Well, I guess I'll put it in the show notes.
You seem to be missing Netminder. I haven't seen him around here.
It's 2041, right? For the UTC.
Where do you find UTC? It's 242 Central.
Okay, yeah. I found it on timeanddate.com. And then I'm trying to post this into the, what do you call it? Show notes.
Etherpad?
Yeah.
Are you in the Midwest?
What now?
Sorry. Are you in the Midwest?
No, I'm on the East Coast, Florida.
Oh, so it'll be by Claudio.
I suppose so, yeah.
Yeah, he was in here earlier. I believe he's from Miami.
I've actually never been to Miami. I haven't lived here my whole life. I am from the Midwest.
Been near Chicago all my life. Definitely not a city person.
Yeah, cities are not my thing. I'm more in, like, a slightly more rural area.
For the WTTR.info, I get can't resolve host name.
Oh, you know what? It's .in, not info. I'm stupid. There we go. It's in the show notes.
Thank you. Thank you.
I have it. I just alias it to so I can run it in my command or my terminal. I keep calling it command line because I come from Windows, even though it's been 5 years. Could never break that habit. I mean, I guess command line isn't wrong. It's just, you know.
It's either or.
Just sounds a bit wrong to me, even though I know it's technically right.
You have a terminal preference?
No, not really. Whatever works.
My terminal preference is I wish to live. Are you telling me there are terminals other than Bash?
Surely not.
ZSH? But I usually use just Bash. That's all I know.
Yeah, I think it's ZSH or ZSH. And I think it's like, what is it called? Fish?
Yeah, I think the United States is the only one that calls it ZSH. Everybody else calls it Zed.
Yeah, I'm from America, but I guess that's just a regional thing.
We're Americans. We're weird. What can we say?
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.